is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to the internet.
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendeville.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
Yes, indeed. Be part of the conversation that matters. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. And rightly so. Top of the Ops is one of the red top headlines this morning for, of course, Cillian Murphy, as in Top of the Ops for Oppenheimer. Not that I need to explain it to you. We're the smartest county in the world, as well as having the only male or female lead Oscar. I put up a photograph last night on my Instagram, one of the 24-hour stories, the entire map of our... We're so conceited in Cork. There's people from all over the country, including Dublin, getting really fed up of us. It's the entire map of Cork, and it just says counties with lead Oscars, right? As in wins. One in the county of Cork. Nowhere else. We drive people mad when we do that. More on that a little later on. But all of the papers this morning are talking of Cillian Murphy, front and inside pages. Independent this morning says, and this is quoting the likes of the Lord Mayor, the primary school that he went to, Micheál Martin, everyone and anyone on Leaside. We're so proud. The world is his oyster now, as Cork will roll out the red carpet. Now, what exactly is involved in that? Hopefully we'll find out a little later on from the Lord Mayor. But I suppose granting the freedom of the city, which is the city's highest honour, is a gimme, isn't it? I mean, that's going to happen. But one would think that there'd be a lot more than that. That's down to the Lord Mayor, so we'll be posing the question to him this morning. So for a man who, as a lad, was born in Douglas, on the south side, 1976, raised in Ballintemple. I think he was in Dublin for a short while, and then they moved back to Cork again with his mammy and his daddy and his brothers and his sisters. And then... Of course, he has his own wonderful family now, his wife Yvonne, who's from Kilkenny. Great article from Ralph Regal this morning, the whole backstory to the life and times of Cillian Murphy. Beautiful children. He's got Malachy, who's 18, and he's got Aaron, who's got 16. And of course, exiled in Dublin since 2015. And I see Reggie online saying yesterday, the only reason that he's up in Dublin is that he can get faster direct flights to go out to all the ceremonies all over the world, and faster direct flights to go over to Hollywood and things like that. Other than that, he wouldn't have an ocean living up in Monkstown in County Dublin. And of course, he's in the wrong Monkstown anyway, says Reggie. He's very funny. The problem with Reggie is that there's way too many F-bombs. If you could tone down the F-bombs, Reg, man of the captains of industry on the old Blackrock Road, we might be able to use more of your audio. But anyway, it's making all of the papers today, chapter and verse, and we'll come back to it. I also see online that all sorts of companies now, actually, you're right. It's very unbecoming, Reggie, of people on the Blackrock Road to be effing and blinding like that. You should rise above the bad language bar. But I see also that if you're a Cillian with a C, what about the Cillians that are born with a K? It's very unfair on them. I'd say there's Cillians with Ks who are very annoyed now with their mammies and their dallies for not calling them Cillians with Cs, because they get all sorts of deals now, like super value of a post up saying that a national holiday to celebrate our national treasure. We think so. They're not talking about St. Patrick. They're talking about the new Cillian Murphy bank holiday essentials. You can buy the entire hamper pack, which includes Tanora and Barry's tea, Clonakilty tea, black and white pudding, Tom Durkin stuff, and Charleville cheese and all sorts and stuff like that. And then you can get into, if you're a Cillian, then you can get in for free to the Cork City Bray Wanderers game at Turner's Cross on Friday. You need to bring ID about what, but it's free in. And then Lidl are giving fivers off anyone with the name Cillian, and €50 off anyone with the name Cillian Murphy. I'm sure that list is getting longer and longer and longer. So it's all great. It's just great to be talking about this, isn't it? Because it's a lot of fun, and an awful lot of people, of course, need a bit of a lift. So your thoughts on that? Text 0868104106. In other news, not so happy news, families are at breaking point. In more ways than one, incidentally, there's an angle taken by The Echo this morning where they talk about the new report from Simon. It's called Home Truths, Single Adults Living with Their Parents. One third of all 25 to 29-year-olds were living with their parents in 2022. And that's way up from 2011 when they last looked at it. In fact, imagine if that was 2022, what would the figure be in 2024? The amount of 25 to 29 year olds. And if we even went north of 29 to 34 or 35, you'd also find worrying statistics. But the report says that more than 1 in 10 single adults new to emergency accommodation in our area became homeless due to a relationship breakdown with a parent where they had to leave. Also, there's quite a lot of court reports this morning, and many of them are stories that we've been following on this program anyway. One is Kamal Kumar Nepali, a 24-year-old living in Ballincollig, who was in court yesterday and was sentenced to 10 years in jail, suspending the final year and backdating it to when he went into custody in 2022. He's a predator who broke into the house into a house in the dead of night, raped a woman as she slept, got 9 years jail. He was found guilty after the trial on one count of rape, one count of burglary, one count of assault causing harm, one count of sexual assault, and four counts of trespass. Now, the judge said the aggravating factor to this included the fact that the rape involved physical violence, obviously, and also that it occurred in the circumstances of an initial burglary, which violated the safety and security of the victim's home. It's awfully sad. The victim impact statement of the woman involved said, "I became a shell of a person I once was. I'm unable to speak or process the events that occurred." So 9 years jail for that vile brute, as they put it in this morning's Mirror. And then to another killing, and this is the killing of a child. It's the story of Karen Harrington that the Independent called this morning a child killer, because she's serving time, a life sentence for the murder of 2-year-old Santina Cawley. She now, through her legal team, has launched a bid to overturn her conviction, and the argument they're making is that the CCTV footage that captured the inside of her home amounted to a breach of her privacy. Now, she was convicted in 2022 of the murder of the toddler. Now, Santina Cawley was found with extensive injuries. Now, Karen Harrington from The Off has denied the murder of Santina, but The Echo picks up on the story this morning, saying that through her counsel, they have made references to arguments put forward by lawyers for Graham Dwyer that were made in his legal challenge with regards to, that was to do with his mobile phone data being used in evidence in his case, where he was convicted of the murder of Elaine O'Hara. So it'll be interesting to see how that appeal progresses. We'll watch that one with interest. A little later this morning, we'll talk to the Garda Representative Association of a story that has caught everybody's attention. And it's the treatment of a member of An Garda Síochána with an unblemished career. Stationed in the Midlands, investigated, suspended for 3 years for giving an isolated pensioner an unclaimed bicycle. He was put through the ringer, lads, wasn't he? A Garda hearing cleared the officer of all disciplinary charges against him. The DPP said there was nothing to see, but yet, in all those years, nobody cried stop. So that continues to make the papers today. And there's another one then involving a taxi driver up the company. This is very interesting, because this taxi driver was actually prosecuted by the National Transport Authority. It's just that they haven't heard of that in the past. I've heard of prosecution through An Garda Síochána and things like that. But this guy now has to pay a female passenger €1,600 redress. He's subjected her to interrogation inside in the taxi, repeatedly asking her if she was single, if she lived alone, saying that you look sexy. Fellow called Lucas Bittencourt, prosecuted by the NTA, pleaded guilty to using obscene and offensive language towards her back in May of last year, and has to pay €1,600 compensation for that. On Lee's side, if you're in town, and I'm in town quite a bit now because I'm in and out with Tony Martin for rehab on the old arm and stuff like that, so I get to see an awful lot more than going in from time to time. I'm quite regular. Every time I go into Cork City, I have another type of story to report, and unfortunately, while some of them are very positive, they ain't all positive, and you always come away, or at least I do, kind of saying, oh my God, this place is just going to rack and ruin. One of the issues that shopkeepers have is theft, particularly sports shops, according to the Garda Síochána on Anglesey Street. Not just sports shops. Other items being stolen and shoplifted include alcohol, cosmetics and perfume. But shops and theft from shops is up 30% in the first 2 months of 2024 compared with the same time last year. Up 30%. Annoying going one way, and that is up. So that's a story of interest which I'll come back to. Your thoughts on the city, or whether you go in or not, or what you see. Because there's always some kind of a story. I'll tell you some more about them in my about a walk I had yesterday, a little later on this morning. But get in touch, text 0868 104 106. Kate Gate makes all of the papers also. And I'm going to park all of the other stories for now and come back to them a little later on this morning. But Kate Gate has to do with a photoshopped photograph of the Duchess of Cambridge and her family. Photograph was taken by William, and then some were suggesting that Kate threw herself under a bus and took the blame for it. Don't know how true that is. There's all sorts of different conspiracy theories going about. The more serious conspiracy theorists are saying that she's very unwell and that the entire photograph was all shopped together and chopped together and manipulated from old photographs. Like, here's one that I got this morning. Neil, people are suggesting that there's so much more to this photograph than meets the eye. The fact that they found 16 visible edits can be seen on this photo suggests that the entire photo was fake and constructed from older shots or a group of different photographs. The conspiracy army are suggesting this may have happened because she might be very unwell, and the royal family are trying to restrict any more bad news from getting to the public. With the Queen's passing and Charles fighting cancer, they may not want more bad news around the family. So that's just one text already this morning. Text 0868 104 106. Claire O'Connor joins me in studio. You've done a bit of morning. You've Good done morning. A bit of a deep dive on this, because many of the papers actually break down the photograph. They yes. show blurry hands, yeah. a mismatched zip yes. On her jacket, the awkward way that her daughter's mm-hmm. skirt is sitting, a vanishing jumper sleeve, and like 16 in total. But this is a manipulated photograph. Yes. What is that?
So it has been photoshopped, and it has definitely been photoshopped. I glanced at the picture first time round. I didn't, you know, nothing stood out to me. I just thought, oh, that's a lovely picture. Kate Middleton with her kids, you know, wasn't that lovely, whatever. And then all of these changes came to light, as you said, the disappearing sleeve, you got the wonky zip, the skirt. My favourite one is the shrub in the background. And they got a gardening expert in just to confirm that shrub can have that many leaves on it at this time of year. So people are really going through it with a fine tooth comb. And it just kind of, it was out for Mother's Day. It was just meant to be a sort of a reassuring picture of Kate, because she's been unwell and hasn't been in the public eye, but it just spectacularly backfired, really. And it's just putting a bit more fan to the flame of all these conspiracies. As you said, the conspiracy army.
How does it work that all these different news agencies put mm-hmm. a kill notice yeah. saying, do not publish?
Yeah.
How do they know?
So they do, they're able to look at this image.
They have their software for it.
They do, and they could tell that it was a special tool that was used. They were able to specify the tool that was used on Photoshop and what it can do, this clone tool. And essentially, they put the kill on it, I think, late on Sunday after it had come out, because to advise editors and everything like that to remove the image from their databases because it contravened editorial guidelines about circulating manipulated images.
But hang on a second. Every single wannabe in the world has their photographs published in all of the newspapers and all of the onlines, and they're all manipulated.
I was thinking this.
And the editors do nothing about that. So why are they going after this woman and her kids?
I think this is more of a news type story as opposed to maybe a fashion spread or something like that.
But why kill it at all? Is it because they're the rife? They don't kill other manipulated ones that are sent from Hollywood stars or pop stars.
But I was wondering myself if they think it is so manipulated that it is so fake. As you said, you know, as your texter said, like, is the image just completely made up of separate images completely, and were the four of them never in this place at one time?
I think that's what the text is suggesting.
Maybe it could be
if they're cropped together and all put together like a jigsaw puzzle.
And that they're killing it because it could just be so manipulated. Now, I don't know. As I said, I think it was supposed to be a picture to kind of reassure the British public, and it's just after turning into a bit more like a lack of trust there now, I think. Now, that could be an over-the-top kind of a thing, but I think a lot of people now feel like they can't trust the picture. Can they trust what the palace is saying, what the aides are saying, what the statements
that they,
are coming
at
out?
At the level of the royal family, should not be engaged in any kind of manipulation. They've got enough issues in the past with a rogue son and, you know, the death of Diana and all the conspiracy theories. And what is it the public is saying? What can we actually believe of them? They do this.
Perhaps. And I mean, the internet runs away with itself, and, you know, it can be a bit of fun. Like last week, before the photograph even came out, there were some which I thought were humorous conspiracy theories going out, that Kate had actually gone to get a Brazilian bum lift, or that she was growing out a dodgy fringe, or that she'd gotten lost in the Willy Wonka experience.
But she did have abdominal surgery,
she did.
Didn't she? And did she want to release that picture on Mother's Day just to show that she's all right, in fairness to her?
Yeah.
And she just messed up.
I think that was it, because she hasn't been seen since Christmas Day or something like that, and everybody knew she was going to be undergoing this abdominal surgery in January. And then what happened at the end of February was that Prince William was supposed to attend a memorial service for his godfather, and he didn't last minute, even though he's a stone's throw away from it where it's all happening. He said it was a personal matter, and that's when all the wild kind of conspiracy theories came out, which, you know, you have a bit of a laugh at. You're like, oh yeah, whatever, the poor woman is recovering. And then this photograph just made things 10 times worse.
Now, she has apologised, hasn't she?
Yes.
Okay.
A statement came out on Twitter, on X I think it was, and she just wanted to apologise for confusion. She said she just enjoys experimenting with Photoshop. She has been known to enjoy photography. I've definitely seen pictures of her with her own like nice looking camera, and often photographs would come out from Kensington Palace that she'd have taken of the children and things like that, you know.
Isn't it very sad that she's tainted by this, and also shown that she's just as insecure as many other people,
sure,
who just can't. I'm loving the ones I'm seeing online of and this is women primarily, who are now showing their beauty without makeup,
yep,
you know, unashamedly, mm-hmm, and saying, you know, this is what we,
this
what
me,
I,
yeah,
you know. So isn't it kind of sad that she also, right up at the top level of the royal family, next queen, feels that she can't be comfortable with how she looks and how her family looks without having to manipulate it, because everybody wants to live in a perfect world.
Absolutely. And like, that's such a huge issue, you know, and I would totally agree with that. But this photograph, it's just something else. I mean, you know, small little things like the skirt and the sleeve and the background, and it's just so over the top photo. It's not like a little tidying up a blemish or putting a bit of a nice filter on it, maybe to give you a clear complexion.
So you think she did all of these? Are you saying she possibly has made 16 different changes to the photograph?
That's what the experts are saying, and that's what many, many people are saying, and it just raises so many questions. And I think that there's two camps. I feel like this poor woman is being completely scrutinised now over this well-meaning photograph for Mother's Day, and trying to kind of let people know, I'm doing well, don't worry about me, because the British public have a right to be worried about the monarchy, you know, at the end of the day. And that's the other thing, you know, she is the future queen. The monarchy really matters to the UK public, and it's of great concern to them, and a lot of money goes to them every year. So it's that kind of question of, do people have a right to kind of be like, well, what's going on? We want answers, when this poor woman is trying to recover from a serious surgery, you know, and keep the head down.
Yeah, I think I did read somewhere that she says that she did it more than once, as in she manipulated and altered the photograph. She was experimenting, and was more than once. So it wasn't just, originally I thought it was just Archie's left arm or something, but then it turned out to be including horror, Kate isn't wearing a wedding ring. What do we read into that?
That's the whole other conspiracy theory then. And that's what people love. They're like, she's not wearing a wedding ring. Why isn't she wearing that? What's going on there? And it just snowballs.
Oh, listen, and it reminds us as well of how fake it all is.
Yeah,
never mind that it is a queen, a princess and a future queen, but that if we could all just stop manipulating our lives,
you know,
stop lying about how we feel, stop pretending that all is perfect, stop photoshopping and editing your life, and be honest
and try and see these people, even though they're, you know, even though she's like a future queen and they're princesses and princes and all this kind of stuff, she's a normal human being who had to have surgery as well, and, you know, just needs a bit of rest, time out.
Nice one, appreciate it as always.
No worries. Thanks for taking
the time. Claire O'Connor, text 0868 104 106. Lads,
call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And you can text 0868 104 106. Back to a story that, and quite literally, it's a big talking point for an awful lot of people, because they're so angry and they're so annoyed. This ever could have rolled on for 3 years, never mind 3 months, nor 3 weeks, nor even 3 minutes, that nobody cried, stop, leave this Garda alone, with regards to the Garda up in the Midlands, who gave a bicycle. I thought it was the most beautiful thing to do. It was an unclaimed bicycle. It was only a loan. It ultimately would have gone back. The tag was still on it when they actually raided the pensioner's house and took the bike off him, because it ultimately was going to go for auction. The Gardaí auction off things that aren't claimed. It was a wonderful thing. And the GRA, the Garda Representative Association, are talking this morning in the paper saying that there are serious questions to be asked about why, about how discipline and culture of discipline is being applied to Gardaí. And I'm curious as to whether the GRA as an organisation will push back against this so that things like this never happen again. The man is very upset. He's had a fierce impact on his mental health. He was telling you about that yesterday. But I'm wondering, are the GRA now in a position to push back so we never have this kind of scrutiny and persecution against members of our Garda Síochána ever again? Brendan O'Connor is president of the GRA. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Would you mind before we drill into, you know, as to what the GRA can do, to try and just, because I could easily do it, but I'd love to get your take on exactly what happened here.
Okay. Exactly familiar with the exact details. I mean, I'm going on a lot of what I've been imparted to me from colleagues and from what the family, but it seems quite a straightforward story. It was at the midst of the pandemic, whenever I suppose we were as a nation, we were in a state of complete, shock and an unknown territory. And so even the nature, even if you take the context, the nature of policing had actually changed because society had locked down. And guards were being told, go out there. I was a guard myself in front of me, do whatever's needed to support communities. So we were doing stuff like getting shopping for vulnerable citizens, delivering prescriptions, just talking to people in through windows that were isolated. So it would appear that a particular gentleman had some need for a bicycle in the Midlands, and he reached out to a Garda who he knew, obviously, because that's what guards are like. They're very approachable. We're part of communities. We interact with communities. And this gentleman appealed for help to source a bicycle. So the guard made a few inquiries around the place and couldn't. He tried various sources to get a bike, and then for some reason or other he decided that it maybe would be appropriate to give a lend of a bicycle to this gentleman because the man couldn't source a bicycle elsewhere. So as you alluded to in the story, it's easy to detail. There was absolutely no confusion on the part of the gentleman who received the bike that it was a loan and he would be getting the bike back. So obviously, it's not correct procedure to be given that property. It doesn't belong. But, I mean, I think the key element here is that it was a temporary, short-term thing. And it was in a lot of the times whenever we're carrying out investigations or putting files together, we will also quote it's whether something is in the public interest. That's a kind of embedded in Garda culture, good, whether to take a certain action. It's not about whether the law has been broken and someone needs to be punished. It's about, is it in the public interest? So looking from my observation, and I think from the commentary, I think this was in the common interest. So for some reason, an inquiry was instituted by the Garda authorities when they realised that this bike had been taken and the circumstances, and there was obviously CCTV of the guard putting in the bike, and it's entirely correct that that guard would be accountable and asked to explain his actions. But for some reason, rather than taking a common sense approach, a criminal investigation was launched, and not only was it a criminal investigation, but one of the most heavy-hitting, most experienced detective investigative units in the nation was used, the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation. The guard's house was raided. Guards arrived in the morning with a search warrant, so that was very traumatic for him and his family, and I understand that. He immediately said, oh yes, I'll retrieve the bike and tell you exactly where it is. When it was retrieved, again, I think I'm going on, I don't have personal knowledge, but I'm told that the label was still on the bike, yeah. So, you know, there was absolutely no attempt to conceal what happened, and the guard was subsequently suspended. Left suspended, and the process of investigation took 3 years, and then the guard was reinstated, I'm not sure exactly when, in recent months, and was still placed on light duties with a cloud hanging over him, and then a formal board of inquiry. It's an internal disciplinary process. It's similar to a court, but it's a different form, obviously, and the facts of what happened were examined in recent day or last week, and that board has issued a recommendation to the Garda Commissioner that the has no case to answer and that no further action should be taken. So it's still in process because the final sign-off hasn't happened. So that's my understanding of the facts. I stand to be corrected on maybe the finer detail, but that's the general.
Thank you for that, Brendan. Thank you for that. The NBCI, as you say, investigate very, very serious crime. They ultimately sent a file to the DPP with a recommendation that the Garda should receive an adult caution. The DPP even disagreed with that, threw it out, really, saying that there was no prosecution. But how come over this period of time, because this ran on for 3 years, I believe, how come nobody, even right up at the top, right up to Drew Harris, I don't know whether you want to go there or not, but nobody cried stop. Nobody had the common sense to say this is insane.
Yes, that is a question that we have to answer and we have to delve into, and it's a very appropriate question because, as you say, there's no individual was making these decisions, but as a collective and as an organisation, that no one said, this is just madness, you know? But we would say, as representatives, and you know, there's been a lot of commentary from us in recent times about the atmosphere in Garda Síochána, the direction of the organisation. And there was a very, very clear, and I suppose it's not written down anywhere, but there's a very clear understanding that this was the new way of doing things in the Guards, a zero tolerance attitude to discipline, and Guards would face serious consequences for any error or any, we would say, would face punishment. I mean, discipline as a concept, I mean, we use discipline, as I say, to rear our children. You wouldn't punish your child. You do want them to learn from their mistakes and educate them. But in the Guards, this discipline is a big unyielding stick, and we feel that it's used as punishment. And it's not only the punishment that's meted out in the terms of the fine or the reprimand that's issued, but it's the stigma. Because, you know, we all know what rural Ireland is like, and people have, you know, rumours and gossips, and people are thinking, oh, that's what it was suspended. But the more to that, there's no smoke without fire. So hugely devastating. And then as a guard out there enforcing the law, you need to have your reputation, and so there's huge reputational damage too here. So it's untold suffering for the guard and for his family, and we would say completely unnecessary. And going by most of the commentary from different people, it was either the public and any observers or people in the media are saying, would seem to agree with the observations of us and what we're saying.
Totally. No. Three Garda cars arriving at his home on a dawn raid for a bicycle. Could I ask you, and I think it's right and proper to ask you, when did the GRA become aware of this, if it had been going on for 3 years? Were you in the dark about this investigation?
No, we would generally be made aware of when a member is suspended, and usually they would start getting representation from our solicitor if they chose to avail of our own legal aid system. And but I suppose the thing about it is the public are shocked, but Guards wouldn't have been that shocked, because we have instances around the country where people are languishing on suspension for years and years and years. And in fact, in the Midlands of this accord, we had a case recently where a member was I don't recall it exactly, but I think in excess of 7 years suspended before being vindicated.
Seven years, you know, and then found to have nothing to answer for. 7 years.
Yeah.
So why would would you even have the strength or the energy or the will to even want to go back to work after that period of time?
Yes, well, I think the member concerned didn't go back to work. God. And we have, there's high-profile cases, another reason the country doesn't want to comment because of due process. But again, members languishing on suspension for years and years and years. They've retrained, they're doing other work. And, you know, it's unlikely they'll ever rebuild a career or return or have any confidence in the organisation. Again and again, you know, there's a level of hypocrisy here, because the message from Garda Síochána through the very slick corporate communication is, you know, keeping people safe. When there was an inquiry into what we consider a story, was a non-story about, you know, guards that answer 999 calls whenever, like, the authorities and the police authority and commissioner ran out to apologise on behalf of wrongdoing in our members, which actually the fact didn't prove, but we were always talking, what did any harm come to any citizen as a result of the actions of a guard? But we would say there's a lot of harm being done to a lot of guards as a result of how the discipline and the suspension regime has been implemented. So, you know, let's have a bit of consistency here. Yeah. Let's see a bit of common sense. Let's see a bit of proportionality. And like I say, the guards that have been investigated because they have to justify their actions and their decision making. Yet the people who are making decisions that are hugely detrimental to their lives, we don't see much accountability in relation to that decision-making process, or much accountability or transparency.
It also probably means that many Gardaí are very wary of situations like that, whether it's GSOC or a dawn raid like this one, and may not be comfortable using a bit of compassion or a bit of common sense, which is really what we all need in life, isn't it? They would be slower. I mean, it was always my understanding that, you know, a good relationship with the local community is very important to Gardaí, because they get it's good, like, I don't mean to be overly clinical about it, but they get a lot of intelligence gathering from having good relationships with the community, don't they?
That was the tradition. That was the model of policing in this country since the inception of the state, over 100 years, where the guard could have a conversation, have a chat with you, a long time off the record, sort problems out, a few phone calls, maybe a word in someone's ear. But this culture now, we're of extreme, and don't get me wrong, we're not saying that there shouldn't be accountability, but this paralysis of fear where guards are like, you know what, it's better I don't have any information. It's better I don't interact, because ultimately what will happen is, if anything goes wrong, if I don't adhere to the letter of the law, to procedures, I'll be hung out to dry and face these sort of consequences. So it's putting a divide between the community. And it's also hampering guards' motivation to go out there and do their job. You know, and we've seen in other jurisdictions where the police actually, will engage with the public if there's a report or a call comes over the radio, but they won't go out and proactively patrol and engage because of this ridiculously overzealous oversight and stringent accountability.
Okay, just finally, Garda HQ said, on Garda Síochána does not comment on individual discipline processes, including the outcome of individual boards of inquiry. That was from media queries. Do you think that, at the very least, Drew Harris owes this Garda an apology on behalf of the force?
Well, as I say, the process needs to be examined, and we need to see where their errors were. And I think definitely that man is due an apology for what he was put through. Whenever he has been vindicated, so far, and whenever we see that actually, you know, sometimes we operate within the prism of policing, but our gut feeling is right, and the public are with us in this. It's absolutely crazy what's going on, and someone needs to stand up and call a halt. And I think it goes outside the organisation. The government has to think too about, you know, the strategy and the policy, and the police oversight too, because we had the chair of the police authority last week, you know, using suspensions as a measure of the success of change in culture. I mean, what a flawed concept that is. And these are the people who are supposed to oversee police and ensure that it delivers in line with our community values and our societal values.
Okay, just very finally, have you spoken to the Garda in question, Brendan?
No, I haven't spoken to myself, but our local representative...
And how is he, they said?
Well, look, someone's personal well-being and their health is very private, and we can't discuss it, but it has had a huge, devastating impact on him and his immediate family. Untold consequences. So I would say harm has been done to this individual, and I stand over those comments by a system and how it is implemented.
For the loan of a €50 second-hand bike. Brendan, thanks so much for taking the call. As always, Brendan O'Connor, President of the GRA. Can I talk also to another contributor to this programme on a regular basis, and that's the former Garda Detective Pat Mara. He joins me by phone. Pat, good morning. Your thoughts on this, as a man who is now retired and has written the book and things like that, The Making of a Detective. Yeah. This is a different Garda Síochána to the one that you remember, is it?
There wouldn't have been, you know, in my time, people would have been disciplined and there would have been due process.
For something like this, though, Pat?
No, I haven't seen anything like that in my time, but I'm reading about it, like it's bizarre, because at the end of the day, on Garda Síochána are a service, they're in the service industry to service the public. And what better way did that man serve the public by giving a bike, you know, that was to take a man who was in difficulty out of a hobble. Granted, the guard maybe shouldn't have went and taken it out, taken the bike, as was, like, you know. But I think when it came to light, the process of having his house searched and going the whole hog with him and arresting him.
Why shouldn't it be all right to give a second-hand bike to a pensioner? Like, it's a small rural community.
Absolutely, but the bike was in the property store. It would have been registered as property in the custody of an Garda Síochána, and that has to be accounted for. And you can't have people just coming in willy-nilly, taking stuff out and giving them to neighbours or giving them to people, you know. But in this particular instance, there was no malice or ill will on behalf of the guard doing what he did. And I think that this is where management fall down badly. They should have sort of seen the whole picture and said, hang on now for a second, instead of going down the disciplinary route and all this, we'll have to get this man to get the bike back and explain to him that, look, you can't just do that. And I'm sure that member would have went and got the bike back. And maybe, and just maybe, and I've seen so much charity by guards over the years, he would have paid for a bike himself or have a whip round or whatever, and get the problem sorted that way. But look, at to send six detectives down to search his house, and this sort of would annoy me, because I'll tell you why. You have, in this country at the moment, the guts of 900 people missing on the missing list, right? And I raised a question in the Dáil asking the minister to consider bringing back retired members with skill sets to be put on cases like missing persons cases or unsolved murders, which is done in nearly every other country in the world apart from Ireland, and they wouldn't entertain it. So here we have people who are missing and families hearts broken, wanting to know where their loved ones are and thinking the guards are not doing anything. And there we have six guards turn up to search a member's house in respect of a 50 euro bike.
I hear what you're saying, and without making it sound over sensationalistic, you have the NBCI. My understanding of those, these are very, very serious detectives.
They're very skilled detectives, absolutely.
Searching for a second-hand bike.
Yeah, look, it really is bizarre. It's not right. Nick, and probably Drew Harris is saying, well, I'm putting my foot down, and any breach of property going missing or anything of that nature will be severely dealt with or whatever.
Aye, but this is an isolated pensioner now who was trying to get to and from the shop during restrictions in COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a case that, let's say, maybe Drew Harris is saying, I'm putting my foot down, it's not going to, the public are going to see that we will not entertain any wrongdoing by any guard.
He's misjudged the public, if that's the case, though.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and this is not the first time. And that's what I'm saying. Garda management have to stand up. Like, well, really, what should have happened in that case, I think, is that the man who handed out the bike should have been brought in, spoken to by his chief superintendent or his next in line, and say, look, we need to get that back because we can't take it out of the stores and it can't be. And we'll do something to get a bike for him, like, you know.
I think this has done untold damage, though, to An Garda Síochán, in the sense of more Gardaí will not engage in acts of kindness, nor compassion, nor common sense.
Well, it'll affect the public. It'll affect that poor man. He must have gone through hell, like, you know, and his family, because he appears to be 100% honest, decent guard, and his own organisation that he probably was so proud of has come along and slapped him in the face, like, you know. So I'm just saying that it's always all handled wrong, but it should never have got to the pitch that it has got, you know. And that's just my view on it, like, you know.
You said the true meaning of policing is lost in Garda management. I think a lot of people would
absolutely
agree with that.
It's absolutely lost in Garda management. And I know Brendan was talking there earlier about, there is a loss of what do management, Garda management, they've lost, let's say, the honesty of what policing is about, you know. And it's something that should be addressed.
But this is one isolated Garda station in the Midlands, and that it wouldn't, I would hate to think it would happen in a Garda barracks in Cork, anywhere like that, you know. Maybe it's isolated and we'll never see the like of it again. Maybe this fella has to take a fall so that this nonsense never happens again, you know.
Ah, well, look, it's not right when you have a decent guard who has given his service to the state and to the public and, you know, has engaged in an action that he believed was honest and right, and serving a man that was in a dire state for a bike so he could get around. So I think in essence, the guard done the right thing, but he done the wrong thing by taking the bike out of the, do you know what I mean? He should have known, look, if I take that out, it could be missing, there could be an inquiry or whatever. I'll pay for a bike myself out of my own wages, or I'll do you know what I mean? I'll ask the lads for a whip round, or we'll do something, like, you know what I mean? Or go to the local bike shop and say, look, I have a man who's in a bad way, can you do anything for him, like, you know? Something like
that's
that
the benefit
line.
Of hindsight,
But I think management should have seen, look, this is a decent man. He was doing what he believed was the right thing, but it was outside of Garda procedure, and it wasn't, it can't be seen.
Do you think that Drew Harris should apologise to him?
Oh, I think you have to wait till due process finishes. And if it is what we all think, that this man was totally wronged in the way that we feel he has been. He should be apologised to, yes, but we'd have to wait for the outcome of that investigation per se.
Sledgehammer to crack a nut. Thanks so much, Pat, as always. Appreciate you taking the call. Pat Murray, former Garda detective. He's got a great book actually called The Making of a Detective. Making of a Detective. He's investigated some very serious crime in his long career. Your thoughts are welcome on that text, 0868 104 106. I'd also like to hear from serving or even retired members of Garda Síochána, your thoughts on the case. I will never give out personal details and information of anybody up to and including members of Garda Síochána, but I'd love to know how you feel about it. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
You know what we call what happened to that guard on Lee Side? We'd call it snaky. That's very snaky boy. And with that in mind, we want to hear your snaky stories as well. We got €300 to give away every day this week, courtesy of Carry Out off licenses. If you're having a few bevs of the weekend, Carry Out has all your favourite refreshments for the weekend. But we're looking for you to tell us your story about your snaky friend, your snaky relative, your snaky brother or sister, son, daughter, mother, whoever the case may be, because we're heading into the St. Patrick's weekend, and we can thank St. Patrick for a lot of things, including banishing all of the snakes from Ireland. So you see where I'm going with that one. So text your snaky story. Some sneak in your life who did a bad... No, I'm not going to say it was a bad deed, but, you know, somebody that was snaky. Text 0868 104 106. Email neil at redfm.ie. €300 to give away this side of midday, courtesy of ourselves and Carry Out off licences. You know, the crazy things that road Garda Síochána traffic corps come across. So I saw something online this morning where they came across an individual with a push bike, and the push bike was fitted with an engine and a petrol tank up on the crossbar. So I'm sure that that could go much faster than a regular push bike would go. But of course, it is a road traffic offence. You can't convert a push bike to an engine and a petrol tank. But nonetheless, that's what they came across. And I read then recently in the UK papers, The Telegraph on Saturday, we're talking about an 11-year-old boy found behind the wheel of a BMW towing a suspected stolen caravan. I mean, it was stolen. If that wasn't bad enough, he was 11 years old. So they were staggered when they stopped the child, who was driving the vehicle on the M1 through North Yorkshire, apparently. Isn't it insane? And when I say a BMW, I'm talking about a big BMW X5. And they're massive. Imagine an 11-year-old, unless it's a very tall 11-year-old, but 11-year-old nonetheless, towing a caravan, going down south from the A1 onto the M1. I mean, think about the carnage that could be caused on the road. Actually, there's an article then in the papers today that talk about the possibility of more road fatalities and carnage on our roads, and the fact that they will rise. They're rising anyway. But by all accounts, the Road Safety Authority, and this is an Examiner article where they got the details of this letter from a Freedom of Information request. And it was sent by the RSA to government ministers, you know, to the likes of the Taoiseach and the Justice Minister, Helen McIntyre. It's all to do with the possibility. It's a new law. It's been parked, pardon the pun, for a little while now. But the pubs ultimately, nightclubs anyway, will be allowed to open until 6 in the morning. And pubs will allowed to be open until 2:30 in the morning. The RSA are saying that this will lead to more road fatalities if the pub laws are eased and people are allowed to sup until 6:30 in the morning in a nightclub. I mean, I think there are very, very few people really in Ireland in 2024 that would even want to be in a nightclub at 4, 5, 6, 6:30 in the morning, realistically. And I think also, I don't know, you're out and about much, but do you not notice that pubs, and even on the weekends, they tend to dwindle and people just tend to leave much earlier than, say, a decade ago when everybody and the place would still be full at closing time. But anyway, I'm not so sure there's a huge amount of appetite for nightclubs at 6:30 in the morning. I mean, there are hardly any nightclubs as it is, but they're saying that they should stop this legislation and, you know, not go with it. But I was talking with a publican a couple of weeks back, you know, big bar and big restaurant, and she made the point to me, and this is in rural Ireland, she says, you know, there's been changes to drink driving in the sense of, you know, how much you can. There was a time when you could have 2 pints, or I think it might even been as high as 2.5 pints. If you go back far enough, there was no limits because there was no breathalyzers and nothing. But anyway, and of course, those were dangerous days, and the cars wouldn't have been as safe, and quite sure the roads were much more unsafe back then. But anyway, now, of course, the limit has been way reduced, right? And there's also people in rural Ireland are afraid to have, she was saying to me, 2 pints and to drive home, particularly if they lived in rural areas or they were the farming community or what have you, people who worked on the land. And then they were even more petrified to go out for a drink because they were afraid of the morning after. The only reason you should be afraid of the morning after, I suppose, is if you've had copious amounts of drinks. But she was saying to me that in spite of the reductions on drink driving limits, morning after, the amount you can drink, and all of the awareness campaigns and all of the advertising and all of the warnings, that it's not getting better. It's getting worse. More people, in spite of all of the changes, are dying on our roads. And a lot of it has to do, of course, it has to do with drink and it has to do with drugs or sometimes both. But a lot of the time it's speed. And those that are really being affected are those who just wanted to go for a couple of pints, she said, and get home safely and do no harm to nobody. So text 0868104106. I wonder if that's what, although he doesn't talk about this aspect of it, Willie O'Dea makes the papers. And because we know that the government misread the room entirely when it came to the referendums. He says, Fianna Fáil need to get back to basics and abandon all of this woke gallery stuff. Get rid of any kind of thoughts about the hate speech bill. Listen to the people. Stop talking down to them, he says. Stop listening to the out-of-touch Greens and charities and NGOs. And he's saying that the government needs to stop playing to the woke gallery. And the weekend referendum results, I think, are one of the reasons why he said that. The 44% turnout anyway showed that people had looked at this and made up their minds. It wasn't that they were confused or anything as to, you know, how they should vote. I think it was more to do with some of the words that they felt very uncomfortable with. But he's saying that we've got way too woke and we need to get back to basics and a bit more common sense. Not unlike, I suppose, the story there with regards to the guard who went through 3 years of hell. And Jumbo Kearns said in the Mirror yesterday that it has seriously impacted on his health. What happened to the bike, people are wondering? The bike is back in the store. Garda Storage has got a sticker on it. Somebody else saying, can you please explain or at least ask officially, what is the official procedure to dispose of lost property in a Garda station after a period of time? My understanding of this, having read it up in the week, at the weekend, Ali Bracken did a great summary, in quite some detail actually, as to what the whole story was about in the Independent of the weekend. After a period of time, I don't know what the period of time is. It could be 3 months, 6 months, it could be a year or 2 years, I don't know. All property that's held by An Garda Síochána that isn't claimed. And I suppose, would it also include all property that is seized because it's part of, it's a criminal asset that the Gardaí have seized. But all property that they have is sold at public auction. So this could be a car, it could be a caravan, it could be a watch, it could be a set of golf clubs, it could be a 50-euro push bike, any of the above. They're all sold at public auction. Text 0868104106 and we will pick it up after 10.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Lots of text. Text 0868104106. Just on the great Oscar winner Cillian Murphy. Cork Neil have now won more Oscars than all Ireland's in the last decade. I need a little to shout out my grandson Cillian Murphy from St. Joseph's on the Mardyke, spelt with a C. His aunt met the actual Cillian Murphy years later at a work event, and he was absolutely delighted to hear that he shared a name with her nephew and stood in for her with a picture. Ah yeah, I'd say he's just an all-round good guy. It's the Killians with a K that I feel sorry for this morning. They're not getting any deals. We can claim another Cork Oscar, you know, Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas O'Connell's great-grandparents were O'Connells from the clubhouse in Eden Curragh down around Dunmanway in West Cork. Actually, Billie Eilish, Claire tells me, also broke a record on Sunday night at just 22. She's the youngest two-time Academy Award winner of all time. They won for their Bond song, No Time to Die, in 2022 as well. Actually, we took to the streets of Cork yesterday because one question that's being asked is, you know, what's next now for Cillian Murphy with regards to movies? I think he has said that he wouldn't. I heard him on Desert Island Discs there recently saying that he wouldn't be adverse to doing another series of Peaky Blinders. I mean, I think Oppenheimer is good, but his character in Peaky Blinders, Tommy Shelby, is the best I've ever seen. So I think his crowning glory is Peaky Blinders, but that's just my own thoughts on it. So we were asking, maybe James Bond might be next for Cillian Murphy. So it's an interesting vox that Seamus had, and we'll get to it a little later on this morning. However, How are we going to welcome him home on Leaside? To say that the red carpet will be out would be an understatement. Yesterday we were chatting about this. Somebody was suggesting that he should get an honorary doctorate from UCC. He went to UCC, did law, but obviously, and rightly so, decided he actually wanted to be in a band, right? So he wanted, it's what he wanted to do, and they were a damn good band as well. But ultimately, of course, into the arts and into acting. So an honorary doctorate at UCC. I think it's a given also. Just thinking out loud, that he will get the freedom of the city, the freedom of Cork. It's the city's highest honour. That is correctly identified in The Independent this morning by Ralph Regal at the sole bequest of the serving Lord Mayor. So it's the Lord Mayor makes a call on the freedom of the city. I'm just curious as to whether the cogs are turning down at City Hall, particularly in the Lord Mayor's office, as to how they're going to welcome Cillian Murphy home. And the Lord Mayor, Kieran McCarthy, joins me by phone. Lord Mayor, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
So, where to begin? Do you have a plan? Is it early days? Can you share anything with us?
I await a response from his publicist and await a response from Cillian.
Just explain to me. So, you have reached out, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. To him and his publicist.
How'd you do that?
His contact details are online, and we verify those with contacts that we have in the arts. I mean, it's not a case of, you can't reach out through family and friends. You have to kind of reach out through international lines. So,
okay.
So I wait a response, probably like the thousands of other people out there that have written to him looking for to have a chat with him. So it's not a case of, I mean, I know people are kind of talking about a homecoming, but I mean, this is a gentleman that mightn't come home for 8 months. He could be going on to the next movie. So I mean, he's a very, very humble individual, Neil, as you know as well. So, I mean, if I say to him civic reception, he might go, no. So it's very, very difficult for me to articulate what Cillian wants.
Okay, so tell me what you, in an ideal world, if he was up for everything, what would you propose?
We're probably thinking a civic reception anyway, at least. That's where we're at this moment in time.
That would be within City Hall, probably in the big concert hall. Are you talking about a civic reception to bestow the freedom of the city upon him? That's at your behest?
That is at my behest, but in the past, there's been conversations like this where the individual hasn't even known and the individual all of a sudden has turned it down. So, I mean, like, this is the highest honour, so I'm not at liberty to discuss that, whether or which. Like, Cillian could go back to me next week and go, well, I heard you on the radio with Neil, like, and say no. Like, I'm not going to shoot myself in the foot by saying A or nay to that. Like, I think the city wants to honour me in some shape or form.
Don't give me a political answer.
I am giving a political answer. I have a Lord Mayor's hat on. It's not a Kieran McCarthy hat on. Like, I represent, I also have a council. I've got party whips that are on my heels. No, it's not as straightforward as that.
There would be no bickering within council. I mean, you bicker about the best of things. There was a lot of bickering last night over Palestine.
But this is not anything
that there'd be any pushback to.
Yeah, but I don't know that either. I mean, I have two ways. I mean, look, there's been instances, Neil, in the past where people have been talking about freedom, and then they've gone to newspapers and they've gone, oh, this person's, I'm going to give this to this person, and the person has turned around and went, no, I don't want it. Like, so, I mean, like,
and did we ever find out who those persons were, or was always kept quiet, was it?
I think it's probably always kept quiet. I've heard legends and tales in my time in the council chamber. So I'm not shooting myself in the foot in any shape or form. I just need Cillian to get back to me, and then we can see what we can do with him.
What I summed that up in saying, it's a case of you will ask him first, or ask his people first, and if they say that he would accept it, then you would announce it.
But that's why I'm reaching out to him to go, okay, well, like, what would you like? Or, like, I mean, he'd come back to me and go, I'm not back in Cork for a year because I'm moving on to the next movie. And then, like, I could come back to you and go, well, it's going to be a year's time. And you're going, well, that's sure, that's old news by a year's time.
Did that ever happen, though? You know, Ronan O'Gara was recent enough. Fady Roach was. Neil Tobin. Sean O'Gahalpin. Mary McAleese. Roy Keane. Like, no, they don't... By and large, Corkonians, true Corkonians, would never refuse something like that. you know.
There's been people in the, well, I don't know if there's been Carconians, but there's been other people in the past. So, I mean, look, I mean, okay, all the people, all right, out there, that, okay, that respect the freedom is me and its historical significance. So,
yeah, but there has been years, hasn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong. Mick Finn never bestowed the freedom of the city on anyone, did he? Some Lord Mayors don't do it at all, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the last time was Mary Crilly 2 years ago, Colm Kelleher. That was the last one.
Good call. Was a good call. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I'm kind of in the dark a little bit as well. I mean, there was journalists ringing me yesterday looking for Killian's contact details, or I'm kind of going from all across the world.
Good luck with that.
No, good. Yeah, exactly.
Joined the queue. I've been trying to talk to the guy for years, and there's a long queue alongside me. But so, why am I reading a paragraph in the Indo this morning? Ralph Regal has a little byline saying, "Hometown may host a parade."
I think they've just come up with "Hometown may host the parades." I've seen stuff as well, kind of going, there's going to be a big homecoming, and but like, sure, the guy hasn't even said he's coming home. Like, I mean, like, this is a man who works in movies. He lives in Hollywood. Like, I know he comes back.
He lives in Dublin. It's not a long trek. I'm sure he'll be up for it.
Yeah, but he spends time. Yeah, but we just don't know. I like.
All right. Okay.
I'm in the dark. Like the media. Like I don't know what his next move is. I'm hoping. Look. Hopefully, if he's I have no doubt that he's listening to Neil Prendeville. So, and this is a call out to Neil Prendeville. So, to Killian, to please get in contact with the City Hall's office, the Lord Mayor's office.
Lord Mayor of Cork is mad anxious to ask a few questions.
Yeah.
That will dictate future events.
Yeah, Neil, I'm ringing you because I know you help so many people.
The only worry about a parade is if you couldn't organise the switching on of the Christmas lights, there's no way you could pull off a parade for Killian Murphy. You're just not capable.
Thanks.
Okay, so you got a couple.
I was being nice to you this morning. I'm ringing you to help me.
You've got a couple of logistical issues that you need to iron out first. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Lord Mayor, thanks so much. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Neil. Take it easy, Michael.
We'll stay in touch on this one as well, because there is a will, right? There is certainly a will, but is there a way? The Lord Mayor is saying that it really is in it's in Killian's court, if you like, as to what way this ball bounces next. But I think it would be a wonderful thing if there was if we really went to town on this, we could do it a bit of good news, couldn't we? Anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. So anyway, I was saying before I was not rudely interrupted by the Lord Mayor, it's always lovely chatting with him, but I was saying that we took to the streets yesterday wondering what is next for Killian Murphy. And of course, he's done an awful lot of great films. He really has, absolutely. I think he's capable of doing anything he wants to do. He played a blinder in Peaky Blinders with his performance. Then, of course, we had Oppenheimer and all sorts of stuff like that. Loads of great films. Killian now is being tipped to become the next James Bond. Or at least that's what they're saying. Why not? That would be another fabulous thing that we could give the two fingers to the rest of the country to... Maybe not the two fingers. Maybe that's maybe a bit too in your face. But anyway, the next James Bond. So we took to the streets of Cork yesterday. Seamus was in town wondering if we had a Bond on Lee's side, what Cork twist could we put on James Bond? Say, for instance, like Cork style, right?
My name is Thomas Shelby. And today, I'm going to kill a man.
Ben Affleck can be Batman, why can't Killian be James Bond? Being a Cork man as the figurehead of the British number one super spy, hey, look at that.
They could make me do James Bond, really, couldn't they, if they wanted to, with the makeup and everything?
Sure, you don't need the makeup, you can't improve in perfection.
And you got the physique for it?
He has.
Has he?
Uh-huh.
But even if there was a Cork James Bond, what Cork twist could we put on the movie? Like, would it be a high-speed chase through the Jackson Lynch Tunnel, Abseiloff City Hall?
Pull him into a garage and get him to get a breakfast roll there. Full Irish breakfast roll in the centre. Or a spare. Or a chicken roll, even.
Oh, no, it would have to be a Rebel Red. Yeah, you couldn't have any sort of martini at all. From a Dublin man.
And of course, it would have to be Sorry's Never Die, because he's from the south side.
Oh, Christ, is he? Well, we live in the south side, so he's all right in our book.
he's living on John Leary.
Yeah, Monkstown, to keep that Cork connection.
Oh, yeah. Monkstown, yeah.
Oh, James. If Killian Murphy was James Bond, I know he'd kill them with kindness. He seems like a very kind, decent, regular guy, you know, very down to earth. I mean, I went to Christians, so I'd have no love affair with Prez, but he's one of the good ones, along with Peter O'Mahonyan and Raj.
Like, would he have, Tenora Martini, or would he abseil off the Elysian, or would there be a chase through the Jack Lynch tunnel?
Yeah, although I do know that they're thinking of making a new movie, and it's based on the North Side. Have you heard about that movie they're making in Cork?
No.
Silence of the Shams.
You could have him running around Shandon and the graveyard,
coming off the top,
up and down the lanes.
I think he'd be fabulous, and I think also he should get freedom of Cork City.
So if he was the next James Bond, what sort of a Cork twist could we put to the movie? Would he be drinking a Raza Martini or
Muffy's Toast?
If he buys me a pint, I come off the dry. I have a pint with him. If he comes out to Cork and buys me a pint, I'm delighted for him, I swear to God. I'm delighted for him. Has to be a Cork drink, Tanora. No, or anything from West Cork.
A glass of Raza, because that's a Cork thing. But Tanora Martini, I think he'd make an amazing James Bond.
Yeah.
He's just so cool and laid back. He's just amazing. It's a very proud moment for Cork, really, isn't it? And for Douglas as well, do you know?
So would you have known him from around?
No, I wouldn't have. But I've watched like Peaky Blinders and films he's been in, and he's an amazing actor. And do you know what I love about him? He's actually very humble. And that's what it's all about, you know. It hasn't gone to his head or anything, and that's a great thing. They were telling me where I got my hair done. That's where his mother goes. So she'd be a very proud Irish mammy today. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So
you're not telling us where you get the hair done, though?
No, I'm not going to tell you that now. Okay.
I love that.
Thomas Selby.
Tanora Martini. We're asking people then about the plot lines, right, and stuff like that with regards to Killian Murphy as James Bond. What would the plot line be in the Bond movie? Here's the selection. Carl says he calls into a police station only to find it closed. Mary says he should have Roy Keane as a co-star. Norries unite. PJ says, change his drink to Tanora Martini, shaken, not stirred. Alan says, part of the plot should be James Bond gets a chicken roll from Centra. He only drinks Murphy's. Never shaken nor stirred. Dean says a chase down through the Marina Market, up Patrick's Hill and all the way around the north side. Brian says an epic gunfight on the shaky bridge, ending with a shootout on the top of Shandon. Tara says, feck the city, it should be filmed in West Cork, Barley Cove Beach for a scene, then maybe a speedboat round the Fastnet, dangling from Jersey cable car. All that works. There's plenty of inspiration down west. Anna says he could say, I will, yeah, when asked to do something in Bond the movie. There's loads of these, actually. Let me do another one or two here while I'm at it. The Young Offenders would be the villains, and Bond would try to break up the international cycle crime. Let's have Reggie from Blackrock Road as the bad guy, Neil. Melanie says his drink would be a pint of Murphy's. The Bond girls would be working in pennies, hon, and the bad guys would be the Young Offenders. I love
so
people's
good.
You know,
so good.
Sense of adventure here.
I'd love to know what cameos would be in it. Like, I'd love to see the guy, you know, the guy who was on you once, and he said, he got a bad one, Neil.
A bad one.
He needs to be, if Bond ever comes to Cork, he needs to say, where did he go? I don't know, but he got a bad one.
The name's Bond. James Bond, you lad.
I'd love to. Who else should cameo in it? I think one of the Echo Boys should be in it.
Keane.
Yeah, well, obviously Keane has to be in it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
Ronan O'Gara.
Ronan. Which is really, really. Yeah, I don't know now, to be honest with you, James. I have to get my new Bridge Silverdor and I'll skip that was on. Yeah, I don't know who else, like, what other Cork characters would be. Like Dancing Dave. You know, would Dancing Dave get in there? Like, I just some really old Cork characters that will get in there. Maybe Paddy O'Brien. Can we give Paddy a ring?
Yeah. See if he's going. That's all men, though. And here's about some of the women.
Actually,
we're doing that.
Sonia Sullivan?
Possible movie titles. Dr. Norrie. From Grown With Love. Thunder Bollocks. On the Bjor's Secret Service. The Bjor Who Loved Me. A View to Killeen's. Doctor No Appointments Are Available. The Fiend with the Golden Gun. Mr. Bond, we've been expecting you. Killeen says, sorry, bye. There was an accident in the tunnel. My head's wrecked from it.
What about instead of Doctor No, Doctor I Will, yeah.
I will. Or the name's Bond, James Bond. More importantly, I'm from Cork, like.
Yeah, or he could be from James Bond, the James Bonds. Born in the James Bonds.
Just another few, my childishness. From Mayfield With Love, The Fiend Who Loved Me. Stop. Keep them coming, lads. Text 0868104106. While all that's happening, can I talk, actually? Well, I think we're going back to 2004, 2005 for The Wind That Shakes the Barley. And many, many people starred alongside Cillian Murphy because there was a casting call on Leaside where many people actually got through the auditions and were part of The Wind That Shakes the Barley. The man who played Ned in The Wind That Shakes the Barley, which was the Civil War movie, it's a great film, was Shane Knott, and he joins me by phone. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Firstly, do you think that if there was an offer to Cillian Murphy for the freedom of the city and maybe a bit of a parade, do you think he'd accept it?
I'd say it's kind of hard to say no, to be honest, if it's a really genuine offer, you know, which I'd imagine it is from our Lord Mayor. I think I'd love to see him honoured, to be honest. I think he really deserves it.
He's very private, though. He's very personal. He's shying off and doesn't buy into all of the glitzy, Hollywoody, lovey-dovey lifestyle. But I think he would, as a Cork man, I think he would accept it. I think he'd be honoured.
Well, I would imagine if it was done in a classy way, I would imagine I couldn't see him turning it down,
you know? His mum and dad would be there, his wife, the kids would be there, his relations, you know, people that he grew up with. All. I think it would be just a wonderful opportunity for the man. You know?
I think it would be lovely, and I think it's richly deserved.
It is. So, I think you were recently looking back at old photographs when you were in The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Tell us all about it, because you auditioned. Who was the director? Ken Loach, wasn't it? So, was there auditions in Cork, was there?
There was. The very first audition I went to was in the Bars Club. They were looking for hurlers. And so it was hot topic out in the Bars in the weeks leading up to it. Who's going to go in for the auditions? And sure, look, I went in with another gang of my buddies who actually all got small roles as well, to be honest. And we went in and met Ken Loach, and it was a bit of fun.
I know, and that if I remember, and I'm going to watch the film again, it's been a long time, but there was, because you had both sides of the Civil War with an awful lot of time on their hands, and there was hurling, wasn't there?
Well, there was, yeah, and there was, I mean, you see in the very first scene of the film, there was a hurler match, a fierce hurler match, really, in fairness, and Ken Loach wanted, actually, hurlers picked for that as much as possible, because obviously Cillian himself wasn't a hurler, so he had to be part of it, but he wanted to make up and have the rest of them as many hurlers as possible. So, as I said to you, the first audition was in the Bears Club, came for looking for hurlers, and I got called back for a second audition and a third audition, and lo and behold, I was lucky. I got asked to play Ned, which I was absolutely amazed at, and I was delighted to be a part of it.
Who was Ned now again? What part was that?
Ned was a 19-year-old guy who got roped into the war. He was after the hurling match. He witnessed the death of Micheál when Micheál was tortured. He was there with Cillian Murphy in the farmyard with the other guys, and they witnessed that firsthand when the British Army stormed the house and they burnt the house and they killed Micheál. Mm. And that's when Ned fell in and joined the IRA after that, along with Cillian Murphy.
Mm, mm, mm. So you went through all of the auditions and were eventually offered the part of Ned, right? So at that stage then, filming must have began, did it? Down, I think there was training, wasn't there? Didn't you train with Army Rangers and stuff?
There was a week's training. Yeah, there was. The first week was training with Irish Rangers, which was brilliant. It was great. It was great fun. It was serious but fun. And they were just going through all the kind of rigmarole with what would Irish Rangers typically do. To be honest, we actually didn't use much of that training when it came to us, but I think it was just a case of getting us kind of into the zone, really. Ken Loach wanted us into the zone of being military minded and kind of be getting us ready for what was it, 7 weeks later, what was ahead of us, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And filming then, was that at the time that you first met Killian, or at what stage, or was he also working out with the Rangers?
He was with the Rangers too. Killian was in with the rest of us from the very start, like, and mixed straight away. There was no airs or graces, or there was no special vans for Killian himself. He mixed with us.
Okay, how successful and popular and how much work would he have been doing around 2004, 2005? He was in Batman, wasn't he, at one stage and things like that. Was that around that time?
Batman came after the Winter Shift to Barley. Okay. So up until the Winter Shift to Barley, he would have been in Intermission, Red Eye, 28 Days Later. And obviously he would have had the famous Disco Pigs, which got him started. So he'd a nice bit of work behind him at that stage.
And were you kind of been in awe of him, like, or were you kind of afraid to approach, or how did that work out?
I was in awe of him. I definitely was. But he was just so easy to be around, and he was very warm, and he was a great mixer, really, to be honest. He was very nice to all of us, and it was just no problem. Like, I mean, I was actually telling Kevin there before this morning when he rang to have the chat. There's a great story of us having a few pints in the Mills Hotel one night in May 2005.
Were you staying there?
We were staying there. So right. We were based there for a couple of days midweek. Yeah. So we were having our dinner after a long day of filming, and it was a Champions League final.
AC Milan, Liverpool, was it?
Absolutely. It was absolutely jammed, the place, and there was Killian in the absolute middle of it as the goals were going in. Liverpool were coming back, jumping up and down. And that was just him, like. He'd no bother with that. No bother at all.
Yeah. I think you described it as almost like a band of brothers. I heard him on Desert Island Discs, and he was saying he had to shoot somebody, didn't he, in the film, right? So Ken Loach,
that's right,
for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, he had Killian, unbeknownst to him, because I don't think he had known the details of the script possibly or something like that, he had him staying in the same room to build up a relationship and a rapport with the man who he had actually would kill in the film. And I remember Killian Murphy saying that this was very clever by Ken Loach, because it made it feel even so much more real for Killian playing the part of someone that he had formed a really strong bond and relationship. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
That's right. And I remember, I know the guy, he's actually, I'd be still friendly enough with the guy, John Crean. He'd be an old neighbour of mine, and just off Ballock Street. And John Crean was the guy who got shot by Killian. And you're right, Ken Loach definitely was kind of keeping them close together for the whole 8 weeks, or whenever John got shot, maybe the first 5 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it was. They were definitely very close, and that was all intentional. And
all
then it broke to Killian, like,
yeah.
It was. That's the way Ken Loach worked. He was really unique director.
Just on that point with regards to Loach, and then back to Killian Murphy before I let you go. They were interested in people who had some sort of a Republican background, or knew, or whose families took sides in the Civil War. Did they want to know that?
Well, in all my auditions, well, after the first one really was kind of more about the hurling side of it. But the second and third auditions, the questions really were like, what do you think of Michael Collins, and what do you think of De Valera, and what do you think of the Civil War, and what do you think should have happened? They were really interested in what the actors actually personally felt about it. So they didn't want to pick cold actors who had no interest in that time or interest in the Irish history. They actually picked guys who had interest and had a history there, like, you know, because that was definitely something very obvious from the auditions. And he basically pitted one guy against another, and he'd give him a situation from from history and say, look, argue this out between you there and have a good argument. He wouldn't even have a script in front of you or a mocky ass script. He'd literally have a kind of an argument yourselves, and he'd give you the starting point to that, and
clever
off you go.
Man.
It was very, very, yeah. So what he got really was very authentic as possible actors, really. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's amazing that you say that, in spite of his fame even then in 04 and 05, he didn't have his own trailer, he didn't have handlers, he didn't have his own quarters, he wasn't eating at a separate table. None of that old nonsense.
He didn't. He definitely didn't. He mixed very well with us. And we had some great conversations with him. I was saying to Kevin as well off air earlier that there was loads of downtime on when we were shooting if we weren't in a particular scene. And there was moments when we'd be sitting in the grass and just lying down, chilling out and waiting to be called. And we would be just chatting actually about the War of Independence, chatting about the Civil War, and actually discussing stuff. And he engaged with us all that time, and he was just he was never dismissive or never kind of saying, no, I don't agree with you there. He was listening and taking it all in. And like, if you spoke to any other actor that was casting that, they'd all agree with me there. It was just one big kind of like kind of happy family, really.
Band of brothers, you describe it as. And just
it was unbelievable.
And just,
it really was.
And just finally, you subsequently then, I don't know how much later, you met him up in Tom Barry's. You were there having a pint. Did he walk in, or what was the deal there?
I did. I tell him, my good friend Nick Finn gave me a text saying, we're going off to Tom Barry's for a pint. This actually would have been this wouldn't have been too far off after it came out, to be honest, the film. This would have been probably 06 or 07. I'm going for a pint to Tom Barry's. And I went over to meet Mick and Kieran Barry. And lo and behold, Killian Murphy walked in. And Jesus, how are you, boy? How's it going? I worked in England, seeing ages. And unfortunately, that's the last time I've seen him as well. It's the last time. I know there's... there was definitely attempts at getting a reunion back together. I know Shane Casey there from The Young Offenders was mad talking about it some time ago, and a few others. Joe Carney was trying as well, I think, a few years back to get something back together. But I think definitely, whatever about the Freedom of the City, it'd be great to get a reunion for the Windowship.
Well, if there was a Freedom of the City and there was a reception, then the reunion could happen then. Jar Carney, the magician, joins me in another line. I'm going to chat with him in a couple of seconds, but just in case you want to say a quick hello, Jar.
How are you, Jar? How's it going?
Shane, how are you doing?
Happy days in the blockbuster movie, working side by side with the superstars.
Believe it or not, myself and Jar Carney flew out to the Cannes Film Festival together.
We did. That was crazy. Right. And it was the time it won the Palme d'Or as well, which is kind of the highest achievement you could win at the Cannes Film Festival. And it was really surreal, just kind of walking down the red carpet that seemed like about a kilometre long, and photographers on each side, so they didn't know who we were.
But in Cannes, did you all hang out together in Cannes? Like, clearly Killian was there.
Yeah, we went to the after party after the screening, and we all kind of hung out together, and we all stuck together, and carried on partying through the night, and
so
then through on the next morning.
He knows how to have a bit of a laugh then and let the hair down, does he, Jar?
Absolutely. As Shane's in there on the Window Shakes the Barley, he was one of the lads. No, one of the things, our ages, you could tell that he was absolutely very, very dedicated. Obviously, he was the lead role and everything else, but you know, when he was around and on set, he was like, he'd interact as just one of the lads. But you know, later in the evenings, let's say when we all go home or whatever, he would be missing, all right, and he used to go, you know, he was very dedicated to kind of
and you think that stood out to you, did it, that kind of talent or that dedication?
Yeah, I think everybody, there was always kind of whispers on set like that, everybody, oh, this is going to be a special film, like, you know, it's like, we all knew we were involved in something that's just kind of, as well, kind of the way Ken works with things as well. You said it there, well, go, we never got the script until the morning of, because he wanted you to use your own language, so there was a real sense of...
Oh my God. That's a challenge.
And it was shot in chronological order as well, so, which is really kind of a nightmare for a production company, because it might make sense to kind of do, you know, scene 10 and then scene 50 in the same location while you were there. But he shot in kind of like this chronological order, so you'd get that sense of, for the characters, that things were unfolding every day.
That's amazing.
But even then, you know, Yeah, you could always tell Killian, and he had a lot of work done at that stage as well. So he was, you know, he was.
And were you entertaining them at the time with your mentalism and your magicianry skills and stuff?
I did a few things in when it was appropriate. Yeah.
And would he be like, "How'd you do that, boy? Show me how to do that, boy."
Yeah. I remember actually, one of the few times we did magic was up in the Maldron Hotel. We were we used to have to take history classes before shoot started. So there was about 2 weeks of kind of history classes about kind of the dates and what went on and what times were like at the time. And that would have been an appropriate time because we weren't really in costume or in set then at that stage, you know.
History lessons and everything. There's fierce detail goes into a film like that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It was a very special time.
So delighted with his Oscar, so deserving.
Oh, it's absolutely. I mean, his Oscar, his BAFTA, everything. It's just. I mean, I really was kind of just fingers crossed, hoping, and he did it. I mean, he's really someone to look up to. He's a really, really good role model, you know. He really, really is.
And I suppose, you know, if it were to happen, Freedom of the City, a parade, a civic reception, it would give you the opportunity to pull together that reunion too, wouldn't it, Ger?
Oh, I'd love it. Who wouldn't? Even all the lads together again. There was such banter on. So we all got on great. Like, I mean, there was probably a core kind of 15 or 20 of us, and we all got on brilliant. And It was fantastic, and I'd love a reunion. If that was to happen, that would be superb.
Well, you think? What do either of you think? Either you, Ger, or you, Shane, as Killian Murphy as Bond with a Cork twist?
Did
well. I put my hand up for a part in the film anyway.
As a Bond girl.
I'm available.
What is the villain?
I'll do it, yeah. That'll suit me grand.
Right. Well, get your agent to talk to Killian Murphy's agent.
we'll work something out, yeah.
All right, guys. Well said. Lovely chatting with you both. Thank you so much. Great insight, not just into the film, but your relationships at the time with Killian Murphy. That's Gerard Kearney, the magician, and Shane Knott from The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. I think I see Waterford Whispers having a bit of a laugh. More on that after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Waterford Whispers are saying it set off an Oppenheimer sized atomic wave of smugness in Cork. Oscar voters might not have realised the horrors they have unleashed, but the lads in Cork will never shut up about this, warned one proud Irishman from Waterford, who is all too aware of what this will do to Corkonians. Just jumping ahead. Cork natives will never let this achievement go unmentioned, no matter what time has elapsed, not even in the centuries of the millennia ahead. They'll be making their own acceptance speeches in their kitchens, in offices, on public transport, like they rated Killian Murphy and taught him how to act themselves. Technically, they must be told he lives in England and Dublin longer than he's been in Cork. So they've as much claim to him as in England or Dublin, offered one just desperate Dublin man, in full knowledge that he's lost the battle with Corkonians. That's some Waterford Whispers. We just did a little check as to, because no, like it or not, Bond, if Killian Murphy plays Bond, there will be the villain, there will be Bond, and there will be Bond girls, Bond ladies, Bond women. So who could that be? And Claire put together a prospective list. Dorina Allen, Mary Crilly, Katrina Toomey, Rena Buckley, Breach Corkery, the very successful dual GA players, Tricia Lewis, Sandra Murphy. Now, you remember Sandra from The Apprentice, where she was known as Samurai Sandra. Brenda and Julie, definitely a terrible twosome there for Bond to take on. He'd be no match for Brenda and Julie. Sinead Kennedy, the RT Today Show. Kerry Ann Vernon, the Cork MMA fighter, could put Bond to the test big time if she was starring in it. Ciara Revens is also mentioned. Anna Geary, and of course Lyra, and that's just a few to be getting on with, prospective Bond ladies. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106, and we'll come back to aspects of Killian Murphy's life and tributes to him again between now and midday today. So your own thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. I have a lot of texts already, which I do want to come back to. But do you remember I was talking about City Council and aspects of the Inner Sanctum on a Monday night when they have council meetings? I just want to go back to that because I did mention it to the Lord Mayor that there are disagreements in council, and we like to see disagreements across the floor. Not last night. you had all of the major parties come together and vote en bloc, as they tend to do. I'm going to say Fianna Fáil councillors and Fine Gael councillors voting en masse, because there was a proposition and a motion behind before council last night with regards to the St. Patrick's Day parade, Joe Biden, Ireland going out to the White House for St. Patrick's Day. But there was a lot of other things happening ahead of that yesterday. Now, the man who will be able to tell me more about it is Councillor Brian McCarthy of the Socialist Party. He's a Cork City North West councillor. And this has to do, of course, with what now is famine and genocide in Gaza. And he joins me by phone. So, Brian, morning to you. Just the background to this. Can you hear me okay? You can?
I can, Neil.
So just the background to this first. It started with a student walkout in UCC on campus, and then there was a rally, or would you call that a protest? I'm not quite sure, outside City Hall at about 5 o'clock. What was that about, and who was at that?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. First of all, the UCC Socialist Society and the Students' Union organised a walkout, 11:30 in UCC. Very well attended. About 300 students and staff were there. And
Does that mean the 300 walked out of lectures, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
And that was calling on the parties and politicians to cancel their White House visit and to put pressure on UCC to support the BDS movement. And then at 5 outside City Hall, there was another protest. It would have been the Socialist Party, People Before Profit, the Cork Palestine Solidarity Campaign, the Workers' Party, and Anuraita Glas all supported that. And then
the BDS movement, for those that may not know, what is that?
Boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's a long-running campaign.
Okay, this is boycott, divestment, and sanctions of Israel.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, yeah. Okay, so then there was the gathering outside City Hall. How did that go?
Very successful. It was well supported. Not as there wasn't the same numbers as at UCC, but there was still enough people there to make the point. And then a number of those protesters went into the council chamber and briefly disrupted the meeting, again, as a sign of protest and to support the motion I had in.
Okay, I don't have video and I don't have any audio and I don't have any evidence of how that disruption went. Was that chanting or reading statements or what?
Well, a statement was read out, first of all, explaining why they were there. It wasn't to cancel the meeting. It was just a brief disruption as a sign of protest. And then there was political chanting.
Like what was said?
Well, it was just explaining why they were there and that they're completely against the Irish parties and politicians going over to shake hands with Joe Biden in the White House and give him a gift of a bowl of shamrock in the name of the Irish people.
Okay, in the sense that Biden isn't doing enough or being strong enough in getting Israel to stop, is it?
No, that's not it at all.
Isn't it? What?
Biden and his administration are the only reason that Israel are able to carry out this genocide.
Okay.
They're arming Israel, they're funding Israel, and they are shielding them in the UN from anything that could actually stop them there.
Okay.
So the UN are enabling this genocide. Biden is complicit in this genocide.
You'll find no pushback from me as to what's happening to Palestinian people and children, the genocide and the famine and the deaths. None whatsoever. So then, was there and then they peacefully left, Brian, right?
That's correct, yes. It was a peaceful protest.
Okay. And you motioned a vote to that end?
That's correct. The motion I put in, again, it was calling, like I said, in light of the ongoing support by the Biden administration for the genocidal actions of the Israeli state in Gaza, including army and funding that state, this council asks all party and politicians in Ireland to send a clear message by boycotting the visit to the White House on St. Patrick's Day. And those other protests were in support of that motion.
Okay.
And
okay,
to let the councillors know that there is a lot of support out there for those visits to be boycotted.
Okay, so the vote then from council members would be on that motion. If it was to be carried, which it wasn't, what was the council saying that would actually have any effect? Probably nothing, really, but more notional than anything else, was it?
Well, I would have actually, like, if the council had, well, things like the way the vote went, there was 3 councillors voted in favour and 17 against, this one abstention. Now, the parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Greens, Sinn Féin, Labour, they all support politicians going over for this celebration. So they weren't going to vote against this. But the fact that they have now publicly done that, they are going to get a lot of backlash, especially the parties that have been very vocal in support of the Palestinian cause.
So not one single member of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour, nor the Greens voted in favour of your motion. They all voted against it. You
And Sinn Féin also voted against it.
Okay, and Sinn Féin also voted against. My apologies. You, Lorna Bogue, and Ted Tynan were the three. Who abstained?
Paddy Dineen, an independent.
Is there a reason why he gave for not voting at all or abstaining?
No, he didn't speak on it, and I haven't spoken to him myself.
Okay, okay. So it's kind of bizarre, really. Was this because they had the whip on and they were told how to vote?
No, I would say they all absolutely support this.
Support what? No, I'm talking about the... I'm talking about those who voted against your motion, 17 of them. Were they under the whip of their own parties to vote how the party told them to vote?
I don't think there was a single one of them in there that needed any pressure of the whip to vote that way.
Okay.
As far as I can see, every single one of them who voted in favour of us were doing it entirely of their own volition.
Okay. And what do you make of that? That not one of them voted for your motion?
I think it's an absolute disgrace. It's hypocrisy. I mean, all of those parties have been very vocal in their support for what's happening in Palestine. But it's just words. They're not backing that up with action. I mean, look at what's happening in Gaza. More than 31,000 people have been massacred. More than 20,000 of them are women and children. Gaza is on the brink of famine right now. Trucks full of food are trying to get in. They're being blocked by Israel. And when food does get in, as we saw last Thursday, the IDF massacred a crowd of people going to get food. They killed 104 people and more than 700 have been injured. The whole place has been reduced to rubble. There's 1.8 million people sheltering in Rafah, which is about to be assaulted by the IDF. And these parties think it's acceptable for politicians to go over for a celebration to shake hands with Joe Biden, who is enabling this genocide.
Okay. I know Israel are pushing back and they're saying that more aid is getting through and that they're helping with as much as possible and it's not them delaying it. Bizarrely, you know, said with regards to the people who were shot and killed that they were actually trampled or run down by the trucks, but a hospital where they took the bodies was on the BBC and the doctor identified bullet wounds in over 130 or 140 different people. So I know what you're saying in that regard. Did you ask them, I'm kind of under pressure for time now, but did you ask any of the councillors to stand up and say why they voted against that motion?
I didn't ask them to, but I introduced the motion and several of them stood up. Someone from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, they were both very hostile. One from Sinn Féin and one from the Greens. They had to be a bit more careful about what they said because they continually show up to the protests. And they both acknowledge the fact that the majority of people who are campaigning on this issue are against the visits to the White House. So they're under a lot of pressure because people see their position as hypocritical in both sides. And why are they sending their leaders over to the US?
America also provides aid to Palestine, however. That might be worth taking into consideration. They have been applying pressure for a ceasefire.
Yes, but they also provide tens of millions in weapons to Israel and funding in Israel, and they shield them in the UN from any sanctions or backlash. Again, the only reason Israel are able to carry out this genocide is because the US are allowing them, enabling them, and are complicit in every Palestinian death.
Okay, I'll try and endeavour to find one of the politicians or councillors from those various parties who voted against your motion and see how they can defend their voting decision. But thank you for now, Councillor Brian McCarthy, Socialist Party for Cork City, North West, from City Council last night. Back after 11, your thoughts on that are welcome.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Certainly do be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. We also have €300 to give away every day this week, courtesy of Carryout Off Licences. You can check out everything they have online, carryout.ie. Over 18s, enjoy, drink responsibly. But we have €300 to give away today. We want to hear your stories about your snaky friend. We're talking about, snaky friends or ex-friends or relatives or ex-partners, the funnier the better, and the snakier or sneakier the better. So text 0868104106 on that one. The best story wins a €300 prize today. Spend it on what you will. Incidentally, the reason why we have this mechanic, as we say, with regards to snaky friends is because St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, and I want to see if any of them are still left behind. So text 0868104106. With regards to one of my earlier conversations this morning, the member of Angarda Síochána who gave a 50 euro bike from the lockup to a pensioner so the pensioner could get around during COVID, cycle to and from the shop for things that he needed within his, I suppose, 2 kilometre range, was yesterday the fourth anniversary. It was yesterday the fourth anniversary of the start of COVID and lockdowns and stuff like that. I think yesterday was a significant date in that regard. But anyway, the elderly man had purchased a bike, but because of COVID restrictions, it couldn't be delivered. So the Garda could not have brought him a new bike as all the shops were closed. Well, thank you for that bit of information. I wasn't aware of that. But what the Garda did give him was the second-hand bike that was just sitting in the lockup. Whoever reported that Garda giving a push bike away to an old man should be taken outside, and then somebody should give him a good boot up the backside, says Jura in Ardfert. Another one, you would think that the powers that be in Garda headquarters would have learned their lesson after the way Garda McCabe was treated, especially when a lot of Gardaí are absconding to other professions and leaving the force. Our country's going to rack and ruin because we don't have a sufficient number on the force anymore. I think that guard is a good egg, and I demand an apology for him. I totally disagree with the retired Garda you had on air. Drew Harris has cleaned up Garda corruption. I disagree with him or not, though. There was corruption. Where do all of the items confiscated by the Gardaí go? Would you give found money into a Garda station? I certainly would not. Ah, here we go again. Have a clout against the Garda Síochána. Blame all of them. Throw all of them under the bus. You're going to have rogue individuals in every profession. But, you know, where does all the confiscated items go? As far as I know, they go into a Garda auction and they're sold off to the best bidder from the public. Morning, Neil. That's why Vladimir Putin will never invade Ireland, because we have no Gardaí, says Bill Collins in Castle Martyr. What happened to the bike, Neil, I wonder? I bet my life savings that it's rusting away. An investigation that cost the state thousands, tens of thousands, over a bike that cost 50 euro and will probably rust away anyway. Isn't this an example of classic Ireland? Yeah, I didn't even think about the cost of that investigation, to be honest with you. Well said. A year and a day, and then it's finders keepers. I found a fabulous bike after Christmas. The guard told me it will be mine if it's not claimed within that time, says Eilish. All right, thank you for that. And then there's a lot then on Killian Murphy, which we'll come back to. Big response to Kate Gate, as they're calling it. Kate Gate in the UK. You know, this is all to do with the photoshopped family pic of Kate. Kids have been killed in Palestine, and kids have been killed in Ukraine, and this is news. People need to grow up. One more then. I don't think I would have used the term poor woman. Somebody saying, stop saying poor woman. She's living in royalty with an abundance of money. I hope I didn't say poor woman, because I think that term is quite patronizing about anybody. So hopefully I didn't. If I did, then I shouldn't have. Kate is not the future queen, in the same way as Philip, the late husband of the late Queen Elizabeth, was the prince consort and not the king. Kate is the wife of the future King William, will be the queen consort and not the queen. Unlike her children, she has no claim to the throne, says Richie in Toker. I understand what Richie is saying, but Camilla is regularly referred to as Queen Camilla, and Camilla is regularly referred to as the queen. Even the official royal family website refers to her as the queen. So if we are to expect the same for Kate, she will also be the future queen. So back at you, Richie, babe. See what you think of that, my man. Let me know. Text 0868104106. Calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
There's a massive response, actually, to the Garda bike story. I knew there would be, and I'll read out some more of them again in a few minutes' time. But I knew there would be, because it's a big talking point with people who have a bit of common sense and a bit of cop on. But anyway, to keep texting 0868104106. Back to the great story of Killian Murphy's Oscar. I spoke with the Lord Mayor earlier on this morning, and there's a bit of logistics need to be worked out between City Hall and Killian Murphy and Killian Murphy's people with regards to, firstly, timing some kind of event, whatever that would be, and whether you would be up for it. Not everybody's always up for the freedom of the city. The Lord Mayor was saying in the past, although I don't know of the names of anybody who were offered it but turned it down. I mean, maybe Google will tell me, but it doesn't spring off the top of my mind. Maybe you guys can think of somebody that did turn it down. Text 0868104106. But then we were talking with some cast members of The Wind That Shakes the Barley back in 2004, 5 and 6, thereabouts. one of his main co-stars was the independent councillor Mick Finn. You had your own trailer and special catering, I'm told, did you?
I suppose it's my claim to fame, Neil, and I think it's his that he played alongside me as well. I saw
a movie still. I'm going to watch the film again tonight. I am, because it's years since I saw it. But there's a still of Cillian Murphy with the cap on in what looks like a hurling game. And are you marching along the sideline with a hurley in your hand as well? Are you the coach?
Yeah, that's me keeping an eye on him on the sideline, but it still is right, because if you miss it for about 2 seconds, it's gone again. So it's right at the start of the film, the hurling scene. And I was typecast a bit, Neil. They obviously had seen me playing hurling with the Bears, but I was actually typecast as a hurley carrier. So that was my role at the start of the film.
Any spoken words?
No spoken words, no. No, I suppose, look, the story behind it is that I was helping Oona Kearney, who was a Cork artist, and she was helping Ken Loach with the casting for the film. So they needed people for the scenes for, like, the armed forces and for the rebels and for that hurling match. So we kind of did a recruitment through the Bears and actually held the casting out there, as well as in Sullivan's Quay School, which closed down subsequently. But that was one of the last things that we held.
So did you coach Cillian Murphy how to hurl?
Yeah. So that, again, no, that wasn't the plan. But what happened was that we were down in McCroom GA Club, as part of that, you know, preparation for that scene. But the actual old style hurleys that they had ordered as props never turned up. And at the time, I was coaching hurling and football in the schools. That was my job at the time. And I was down there and had them all in the boot. So what we did was, while we were waiting for the actual props to arrive, I took out the hurleys and did a hurling session below McCroom in the Castle Grounds in the GA Club. So we were showing him and all the Padraig Delaney and Liam Cunningham. So I was showing them again, just kind of the basics of how to play. Now, he had played before.
Had he? Because I didn't think he was all that interested in sport. I was reading our maths or things like that. He was a...
Yeah, I suppose he wasn't, but he had played it in school when he was in St. Anthony's in school. But I was asking him to do it with a bit more passion. And I don't know, there was a great slagging at the time. It took him a while to get the hang of it. And then the interesting bit was, when they got the props, they were just basically planks of wood. And he broke two or three hurdles. Says we were saying to him, he'd cost GA clubs a fortune if he was still playing.
Because the boss was very different back then. The head of the hurley, wasn't it?
Yeah, the head of the hurley was very different. But like, they were, you know, back in those days, those hurleys were solid. I mean, they're still actually around. We have one in the Bears clubhouse. But these were just actually bits of wood, I'd say bits of crate props that were made to look like hurleys. So it was impossible actually to use them in the matches.
I should have was daft. They used to march with them and drill with hurleys as well, didn't they?
That's right. Yeah, they were used, I suppose, as replica guns for marching. But you know, like, it was good old fun, and people were slagging him about, you know, his hurling abilities and everything else, and that he wouldn't go anywhere. So it was interesting to see it. Obviously, it was great. And, you know, it's a bit of a claim to fame for many of us. I think you had Shane on before the break.
Shane and Jared.
They got great roles out of it. And I don't know if Shane told you the story about two kind of older Bears fellas who have since passed away, the great Sean Fitzpatrick and Noel O'Callaghan, who were recruited to be the kind of the two on the sideline, you know, giving encouragement to the players. But they actually called out Killian's name and Shane's name during the match. Like, well done, Killian, but not Shane, instead of using your character name.
Was that edited out?
It had to be edited out, had to be redone. The scene was going great. And then we had the two lads, like, you know, well done, Killian, well done, Shane. And then, cut. It was very.
So, did you have any interaction with Killian back in the day?
Well, that was it during the training session mainly. But then we actually met him. We were all invited to the premiere as well at Mahon Point. So we met him there, and actually I would have met him subsequently just once in Barrack Street when he was socialising himself.
Yeah, Shane said you were having a couple of pints, and Killian walked in.
That's right. That was in Tom Barry's Barrack Street, and he walked in. No, he obviously would have known Shane well, because Shane had a significant role in it, as did a number of people in Cork. I think the interesting thing again about that at the premiere was that when it came up on the big screen, you had everybody in the audience kind of shouting out, you know, oh, that's such and such a fella, and that's such and such a fella. So it was actually a great project for Cork, and there was lots of people who had no acting experience, and, you know, it was kind of funny at the time, but it was a real opportunity as well for young actors. That chap party, the lady, went down to star in an RT series as well. And Killian, I suppose, at the time, was just kind of becoming known. But, you know, obviously that went on to win the Palme d'Or in the Cannes Film Festival. But it was just, you know, he was people are saying in the wake of the Oscar success, he was really unassuming. He was very normal. And, you know, he was a good crack as well.
Yeah. Did you get paid for that role?
Yeah, well, I got the princely sum, I think, of €150, whereas others got 20 grand and 30 grand that I organised to be in the film. But look, it was, you know, it's a story, though, that I people are sick of me telling the story, and I had it on my CV and everything for ages, and it was a good talking point. So no, that he's an Oscar winner, I can add that onto it as well.
Are you up for the Freedom of the City, incidentally, or some kind of civic reception, maybe even a parade?
Obviously. Yeah, look, I think that the Freedom of the City is an obvious tool that the city council has, and you know, the Lord Mayor, I know, has been speaking to his people. I think, you know, he deserves it. This is a huge honour for him personally and his family, but also for Cork. I mean, you know, you look at Twitter yesterday and saying that Cork people are going to be so annoying about this, and they're dead right, because this is, you know, this is seismic. This is, when you consider the impact that this has globally, I think that would be an appropriate forum. And if that's not possible, I think a parade or a homecoming should be organised. But again, he probably doesn't want that, because that's the way he is. But look, I think we need to do something, and we need to make sure that it's...
Yeah, and the Lord Mayor said that they need to find that out first. You can't be going on a solo run like a hurler, and then him saying, listen, I'm not interested in that, it's not my thing.
Yeah, and I just heard you saying there about the freedom, usually that's what happens, that an approach is made to the person being nominated, and they decide whether to take it or not. I think most people obviously don't through the years have.
Would it ever be made public as to those who turned it down?
No, I wouldn't. Okay. I'd imagine, and I know, like that. You know, as I said, a Lord Mayor, or you know, may have an idea of somebody, but they'd have to approach them or the family and see if they're willing to take it. Because obviously, that would be embarrassing if the
totally. And just on another lighthearted note, we're probably lucky that this isn't your term as Lord Mayor, because you had no Freedom of the City awarded. Why did you do that?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'd been giving out for years that we were handing it out too often, that we're handing it out every year, kind of, you know, with regularity, and I just felt that the award might have been compromised, or the kind of, you know, the importance of the award and the significance of it.
Yeah.
So I couldn't then very well appoint somebody, even though I had a number of people contacting me about nominations, but I just felt having given out about it. So it's something that, you know, has calmed down a bit, and there might be one or two per term of 5 years, which I think is better than having one every year.
So if you were Lord Mayor now, this would be a recipient that you certainly wouldn't refuse.
No, I wouldn't refuse it. I think it's very appropriate. But again, look, that may not happen, given that we've only 3 months left in the council term. You know, these things take time to organise. But I think we should do something to mark it. And again, it would be in consultation with him and his people, as they say.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens in that regard. We're historically not so good at parades. The people would love them, but unfortunately, the powers that be at City Council aren't fans of them. For, I don't know, they call it health and safety reasons. It's not nonsense to me.
Yeah. I know, like, you, I suppose you look at the Christmas event maybe being an indication of that, but we do manage the St. Patrick's Day parade really well. And I suppose I was saying online last night that we're after forgetting about how to do the parades for Cork teams, because it's so long since we've done it. But I think, you know, after winning All Ireland's and stuff, but I think that could be managed as well.
Okay. But clearly we have Frank and Walters, who are the Grand Marshals for the parade this year, but wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility that Killian Murphy would be the Grand Marshal next year, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, or maybe some way of factoring into this year, what I was thinking as well. But again, you know, I'd imagine that his diary,
the schedule, we'll see. Just finally, because I just want to ask you a question on another matter, and this was the vote last night by Brian McCarthy, who's the socialist councillor, you know, to put manners on Biden and America, and that we shouldn't go to meet him, there shouldn't be the bowl of shamrock, etc. No, Taoiseach, or I don't know whether he's also extending it to other politicians travelling around America, but certainly Biden. All of you guys voted against that in spite of what's happening in Palestine. What was your vote on that? Do you mind me asking?
No, I had to leave a meeting early, Neil, and I didn't vote on it. But if I had been there, I would have voted against it, mainly not because, you know, I agree with what's happening in terms of Biden and his handling of the situation. But I think, you know, Ireland has a unique situation on St. Patrick's Day in having the year of the president. And I think that the Taoiseach travelling and the delegation should make it, you know, crystal clear, that he should be calling for an immediate ceasefire, that's the kind of the vast majority of Irish people feel that way. So I think we, you know, rather
that
than...
That falls, isn't it? Way short of... I mean, like, Leo Varadkar isn't going to go into the Oval Office and criticise Joe Biden.
Well, I think he should. And I think that's the whole idea. If you don't go into the Oval Office, you'll never get that chance. And I suppose just reflecting on last night, there was a group, you know, it came clear at the start of the meeting that there was a group wanted to come in. They weren't allowed in. The doors were locked in City Hall. They were facilitated coming in. And I mean, it's the same thing. If they weren't facilitated coming into City Hall, they couldn't have made that protest last night. You know, so
there was nothing wrong with protest, though. I mean, that's part of our democracy, isn't it?
But, oh, no, absolutely.
There is a public gallery in City Hall. So what's the deal there? Yeah. That's okay.
The deal is that if there's organized groups coming in, it has to be cleared, or it has to be just there's a process to go through going through City Council. Okay. And if that hadn't been facilitated, which it was, and they were in the public gallery, if that hadn't been facilitated, they couldn't have made that message clear. And it's the same thing going to the White House. If you don't go there, you can't impress. And it's up to the Taoiseach. I would suggest that he has to be very strong in his condemnation of what's happening over there, and in saying to the President, you know, America played a key role in the Irish peace process. They need to do the same over here.
But just finally, does anybody find it bizarre that not one of the major parties, not one single councillor from Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, or Labour, or the Greens, not one of them broke ranks?
Yeah, well, you know, again, I mean, I suppose they'll have to speak for themselves, but I'd imagine it's because of using your opportunity that you have. Again, we're kind of unique in probably world culture and world politics, that on St. Patrick's Day or in the run-up to it, we have access to the Oval Office.
Or is it that they're instructed by their parties on how to vote? There are whips in City Hall, aren't there?
Yeah, and that could be it. And sometimes, Neil, and I've seen it over my near 15 years at the council, that it depends on who suggests the motion as well. Sometimes the parties tend to defer to their own or to the ones that they cooperate with, even if the idea is the same one.
Even if it's a good idea, because it's not from their party, they'll vote against. That's correct. So childish.
Yeah, and I've said that before, and I've come out and said that, and that has been very frustrating for me.
Oh my God.
A couple of weeks ago. As well, there was a vote being proposed, I think, by Ted Tynan, and the parties decided against it and voted for an identical one by a member of the
meeting. That's just kid stuff.
That happens. Yeah, it does.
That's
happen
kindergarten. Right. Okay, thanks, Mick. Have a good one. Appreciate you taking the call. Take care. Independent councillor, former Lord Mayor Mick Finn. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Just to correct earlier, I knew there was some kind of significant date around this time. It's actually today, on March 12th, 4 years ago. I'm just mentioning it because it's like a fourth anniversary. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar announced the closure of all schools, all colleges and all childcare facilities. It was on this day, on the 12th of March, 4 years ago. And then the first stay-at-home order was issued on the 27th of March. You might recall that. I think he might have been, I don't know whether it was the steps of Leinster House. There was another announcement then, I think, that was actually done from America at the time over the St. Patrick's weekend and festivities around St. Patrick's Day and what have you. But 4 years ago today was the date of closure of schools, etc. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
All right, pick up the phone, text 0868104106. Super interview with Brendan O'Connor of the GRA this morning. The motto of An Garda Síochána across all their social media platforms is hashtag here to help, which is exactly what that kind Garda did regarding the bike for the pensioner. Those in HQ have a hell of a lot to answer for. It really is a case of damned if you do and damned if you don't. That's from a Garda's wife. The GRA is a waste of time. They don't help the right people, but yet if a Garda won't work and goes on the sick for months, they jump all over the place to ensure that they still get paid. I think, you know, that's probably somewhat unkind and overly critical. I think the GRA has a right to intervene on somebody to make sure that if they're on sick leave that they get paid. You'd wonder if this was a good guard being set up to be taken out of the way as a scapegoat. It's ridiculous. There are plenty of bad guards out there, unfortunately, as well. Okay, okay. I'm ex-military. We were encouraged to use our initiative, and I think that is what the bike Garda did. Are the Gardaí not used to initiative? Are they supposed to be robots or what, says Pa? This was a shocking situation with the guard, and no wonder there's no faith in the top brass. On top of this, these guards are being paid while suspended, and so doing nothing for a wage through no fault of their own, says Anthony. One more, the Garda did go to a local bike shop and had arranged for the loan of a bike for the man. Unfortunately, COVID struck and the shop closed, so there was no bike. How do I know this? I read this in a piece that Paul Reynolds, the crime correspondent, did in the Irish Independent. I did not know that. It's a disgrace what happened and what that man was put through, no matter what the rules are, whatever happened to common sense. Keep those coming. Text 0868104106. We'll come back to them. Hope we have time. If not, we'll do it in the morning. And an awful lot of people then with regards to Cillian Murphy and the possibility of being the next Bond. Now, can I just turn to another story? And I'm going to walk through this as best I can. It involves a man by the name of John Manning who needed a loan and contacted a company called Scale Finances. Now, can I just say, we checked with the Central Bank of Ireland website and they have lists of unauthorized finance companies and firms. And this company, Brendan Finance, are on it. Brendan Finance apparently operate Scale Finances. And the warning from the Central Bank is this firm is not authorized to provide retail credit services or any other financial services in Ireland. They go on to say this scam is an example of an advanced fee fraud where a payment is sought upfront prior to the providing of a loan. The loans are never provided. Now, that's as strong a warning as you can get from the Central Bank of Ireland. But having said that, John Manning wouldn't have been aware of all of that, I'm quite sure. And he joins me by phone. John, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
This all came as news to you later, did it?
Yeah, I was kind of shocked, really, because I'm very tech-savvy. And it was a case of they were so good. They were convincing so much. They convinced me after I paid the €95 first month installment.
Okay, just let's talk through that. They offer 24-hour turnaround finance. And you found them where?
On that website, okay. Which is the Brendan Finance website, yeah.
Okay, and you agreed to it and they sanctioned a €2,000 loan to you. Go ahead.
Correctly, yeah. And he asked me for the €95, which was the first installment payment up front, which I paid, of course.
So you gave the first payment of €95 a month before you got the €2,000?
Yes.
No alarm bells going off there, no?
No, because Neil, looking at the website and everything else, it really looked legit to me, and they had customer service, 24-hour service, and this and that, and they were regulated by the Irish, by the Central Bank of Ireland. No, I didn't see afterwards when I checked this, I noticed that they were, of course, illegal. So
were they saying they were regulated by someone or other?
It does say on their website, yeah, that they're regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, you paid the €95, which is the first monthly installment on the €2,000 loan. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And, of course, he said, look, they rang me back and said, okay, it's all almost ready. They said, by the way, if you put in €200 now, we'll fast track the loan to you within 2 to 3 hours. And I was like, oh, no. The alarm bell started ringing immediately. I said, this is a scam. And he did say, oh, by the way, look, we've put in €240 into my bank account.
Right.
So he said, go check my bank account, which I did. There was €240 put in. And there was also €260 put in. And I'm like, there's €500 in my account here. And I said, they're legit. They've got to be legit. So he requested that I transfer the money back to them via my card through Revolut to WhatsApp, if you can get me. This is
why
the way it worked.
Why?
Because to do it by card, it would be faster to get to my Revolut because it was the weekend. But if I had done it through my bank to my Revolut over the weekend, they would not get it till Monday.
Okay, so let me just recap. So, you got the finance agreed, €2,000. They asked you for the first month's payment, the first installment of €95 up front. You did that. Then they came back to you and said, listen, if you give us €200, we'll be able to fast track your application and get you the loan really quickly. Alarm bells rang. You checked your bank.
Yeah, and they said to me, check my bank account that they've put in €240, and then they said, oh, we've also put in €260 by mistake.
Okay, so they said the 260 was a mistake. Please send the 260 back.
Send the whole lot back, really.
they wanted you to send back the 500 that they gave you.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. What happened next?
Well, at that stage, if I had any common sense, I should have just hung up and held on to the 500. You know, I should have just, you know. I spoke to a guy in EIB yesterday, and he said it happened to an old lady who they had given 200 to her account. And while he was in the bank with that lady, she received like 30 phone calls in the bank while he had a phone. So,
did he answer it? What were the phone calls about?
He never answered it because he knew there were scammers. You know, he told her, let him ring. Eventually, the lady had to change her number, as far as I know. But, and like, my account now is frozen. Of course, it's part of an investigation.
Why is it frozen?
Because it's part of the investigation by the fraud squad, because they had put money into my account. My bank rang me from Douglas yesterday, and he asked me, he got an email from the fraud squad to say that, is it okay that I repay the €260? And I said, why? And he had told me that it wasn't my money, it belonged to somebody else. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but I already gave him back the whole lot. I gave him back the 500, you know. And he said, oh, okay, that's okay. And in the meantime, my account is frozen. It's under investigation. Now, I have a new bank card coming. I'll be able to use my bank, you know, via the card. I cannot log in with my app and stuff like that.
Okay.
Apparently, the same company at the moment, while I was in the Garda station yesterday, I met a girl, and they're sending out money into people's Revolut accounts. And if you reply to them, they'll say, oh, I've sent you this by mistake. But if you reply and return it, they will clean out your Revolut.
How can they do that, though?
They can fish. I don't know, man. These guys are professionals. These guys are really, really good. I mean, to put money into my bank account, which I gave them the IBAN number, within minutes, you know, they can do it in Revolut. They'll send it anonymously saying, look, all of a sudden, you know, I put money into your account. You know, can you please return it? And the girl told me yesterday her friend had returned it, and all of a sudden her €200, what she had in it, her Revolut was cleaned up.
So that was hoovered out as well. And the reason they have that is because you would have to be a so-called customers of theirs for them to have your number and stuff, right?
Our friend, of course, in Revolut. You know, when you transfer money on Revolut.
I know. So are they being investigated by the fraud squad?
They are, and the customer service as well, and the whole file. And I reckon this should be on Crime Watch. I reckon that this is they must have scammed thousands of people in the country. They must have had.
Well, the Central Bank of Ireland says this is a scam. It's an example of advance fee fraud. Remember, you were asked for an advance fee?
Yeah.
You know, you actually paid the first month's installment, and you were asked for another 200 to...
I agree with you. And look, I paid the 95, but I think what hooked me in was the fact that they put money into my bank account. And I said to myself, oh, they must be legit, because they were able to put money into my bank account. They had the money, you know.
So they have a support number and everything, info@scalefinances.com. They have an 083 phone number that we've been back and forth with. We're looking for one particular individual whose name was mentioned, but they came back and says, thanks for getting in touch. Let us have your email and your reference number. We responded, well, we don't have a reference number. We just want to talk to this guy, Michael, what's his name? Because I hear you're offering loans to people. They said, did we send any email to you? We said, no. We were told about you by a friend. Is he available? And we also said, by the way, are you underwritten in any way, shape or form? We got no response to any of that. But they do say Scale Finances is regulated with Reg, whatever the hell that is.
I don't know, Neil. I know there is a company called scale.
Well, don't mention any other company that might be legit if you don't mind, right? I don't want to go there. I don't want to associate any good company with someone who's engaging in fraudulent activity. But they give a reg number. Scale Finances is regulated with reg, and then number has like 10 different digits on it. Do you think many people have been caught?
I reckon there's thousands after being caught. I reckon there's thousands. I reckon like these guys are so, so good. I mean, I'm tech savvy. I mean, I just watched this guy on Twitch there. I forget his name. But he still does. He rings up scammers in America, and he would keep him online. He would act as an old lady, and he would keep him online for hours, and you'd be laughing at him because as long as he keeps him online, he stops them from scamming somebody else, you know?
That's, I've seen that. He gets great pleasure out of turning the tables on them, let's see if anybody else has fallen victim, and be interested to know where that fraud... They'll come back to you and let you know how that fraud investigation goes, won't they?
Well, the thing is, the payments were made through my card, right? No, I don't know if my card is insured for that. I haven't a clue, you know. I mean, I'm owed €295, but the money is just... I'd like to just let people know because this is happening and these guys are very, very good.
Seriously dodgy. Let's see if anybody else has come a cropper. But thank you, Brett. Listen, John, if there are updates, do let me know, will you?
I will, of course, yes.
Alright, thanks for coming on, pal. Appreciate you sharing it. Scale Finances, which are tied to Brendan Finances, as in Brendon. Anybody got any information or maybe dealings? Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
And Cheltenham starts today. A lot of people were watching it. A lot of people will be heading to the pub and heading to the bookies and all sorts of stuff like that. Joe Seward headed straight to Cheltenham. The sports broadcast journalist joins me from the track. Morning, Joe.
Good morning, Neil. Good morning. Welcome to Cheltenham, day one of the festival.
I don't know about the favourites with regards to the runners and riders, but it was written yesterday that the real favourite will be 300,000 pints of Guinness will be sunk, 14,000 bottles of champagne. There's 2 kilometres of bar space there and tens of thousands of gallons of tea for those that want to remain teetotal. So there'll be big money dropped socialising for sure, yeah?
Yeah, it's a huge operation here, and if you are purchasing anything here all week, you can't pay cash. The only place you can use your cash is with the bookmakers. It's card only at all those outlets. So anybody who's attending Cheltenham, beware of that.
And anybody attending Cheltenham, also beware that there's a shortage of toilets. I'm told it's there. People are being warned.
Yeah, they've been going on about that for the town, I think it was slightly over the top. It's something I've never noticed, but then again, it was a huge problem in Leopardstown recently at the Dublin Racing Festival as well. So clearly, a lot of racegoers nowadays are there more for the social aspect than the betting. So maybe that's putting pressure on the toilets.
That's putting pressure on the bladders, yeah. Like, what is there? 250,000 people in the 4-day event. Is that number correct? 250,000?
Yeah. At its peak, it was getting over 60,000 people. It's kind of dipped in recent years to about 55,000 a day. And there's been talk this year that the spoiling costs of seeing ticket sales fall. Although Cheltenham Gold Cup Day on Friday is sold out. But there was a huge amount of English people came to Leopardstown recently for the Dublin Festival because it's far cheaper. Racing in England is quite expensive.
Right. Okay. So today, day one, any couple of tips for us? Because I know there's some car connections. Joe Donnelly is involved. Of course, we have the jockey Paul Townend doing a lot of riding. There's a Yawl connection with regards to horses. What's the car? Like, who are you backing?
Yeah, this meeting is dominated by Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. And a lot of the races have attracted very small fields. There's a lot of talk about the lack of competition. So a lot of short-priced favourites. Willie Mullins had 8 winners. That's his record. And they're talking about him having over 10 winners this week. And Paul Townend from Lisgoold would be favoured to be top jockey. Today, they combine Willie Mullins and Paul Townend with Joe Donnelly, Joe and his wife Marie Donnelly, with State Man. He's a hot favourite to win the champion hurdle with the original favourite Constitution Hill and On Runner. And Paul also rides Lossie Mouth in the Mayor's Hurdle. So those two are seen as bankers. They're very short prices. You won't get rich.
We want to make a few bob on them. So any kind of 5-1 or 8-1s that fancy? No?
Today, in the last race, Corbett's Cross, he was a Cork horse. He has a bit of a chance. He will be around the 5-2 mark. There's a couple from Yale that Kathy Bariga and her husband. They've got two mares running today: Hispanic Moon and Lantry Lady. They're giving their mares an each way chance, but they come up against Lossy Mouth, who's a very, very good horse.
Okay, so you're looking at the favours, the 130 Firefox each way, the 210 Gaelic Warrior. Paul Townend is riding in all those races. State Man in the 3:30, Lossy Mouth in the 4:10, and Corbis Cross in the 5:30. Will you be doing? Are you doing a bit of socialising though, having a couple of pints or a bookmaker sandwich or whatever?
Yeah, well, I mean, at night you go for a nice meal. I had a nice Indian meal last night, and I keep it low key with beers, a few light beers for the week.
Fair play.
Try to keep focused on the racing.
Keep focused is right. Yeah,
just
yeah.
Nice meals at night. That would be the big thing. Of course, we have that famous Cork horse, well, Cork name, running on Wednesday, Langerdan. He was a winner last year, and he's a very interesting horse because
Langerdan
by Colin Donlan, who was head of investment at Morgan Stanley. I'm not sure if he still is. He was actually advising Ryanair at the time they were trying to buy Aer Lingus. But he has this horse, Langerdan, who won last year. He's a great record at Cheltenham. He was second to Gallop in the Champ. He was sixth in his first year here, and he won last year. But his form has been terrible this year.
He's shocking. Pulled up and beaten. And all.
Yeah.
But like last year, I think we won well on Langerdan at like 8-1 or something. So is that on wins?
Day. Yeah, the problem is he's been busting blood vessels. Now, if it was in the United States, they'd be allowed to use a substance called Lasix or Buse, but that's prohibited here. So when a horse busts a blood vessel, it kind of hinders their progress when they come under pressure. But a funny story about Langerdan, when Colin Donlan, who's a very wealthy man, bought him originally, he looked in the field, the trainer said, "How did you buy this horse? He's tiny. He's a tiny Langer." A tiny Langerdan. And he said, "Get rid of him," but he didn't. He held on to him, and last year he was rewarded with Cheltenham Glory in the Coral Cup. So
okay.
He runs on Wednesday, but on his form this year, it's hard to fancy.
Poor old Langerdan with the burst blood vessel. We'll talk again tomorrow or Wednesday, whatever the case may be. I'm under pressure for time now, but I just want to look back and remember Langerdan last year.
Campron down towards the last has the advantage. It's 2 or 3 lengths from in second place, an epic song. Then Langerdan up the hill. Campron has the advantage. Langerdan and an epic song throwing down challenges. Langerdan and Campron between the pair, an epic song. Langerdan and epic song and Campron, a finish of heads, and the Langerdan has got his festival win. The aeroplane salute from his rider.
I hope that you made a few bob on Langerdan last year, because the chances of that happening Wednesday, but you never know, the Langer might rise to the challenge. Get me out of this studio. Anyway, listen, last bit of business for you is your snaky friend stories. It can be a relational friend. I don't mind. I got €300 to give away every day, courtesy of ourselves, and carry out off license. So, Ellen, Barry, Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
And you wish to reveal that your sister, Roisin, is a snake. She's a snaky character.
She is very snaky, I have to give it to her, but in a funny way.
All right. In what way? So what did she do to you?
So not to me, but so there's three of us. So we have an older brother, and he's really talented on the saxophone, but he's quite shy about it and quite nervous. So he was gigging on Sunday inside in the Brew Bar, but he actually specifically told me and Roisin, my sister, not to come in. And we're all in our 30s, so she kind of, she got a bit annoyed that he had told us what we could and couldn't do. So she said we should go in disguise and go to the gig anyway. So we went all out.
Somebody, I don't know whether it's you or your sister, is a dead ringer for Madonna. Who's that?
I'm not sure. So I'm wearing like a really short white wig, and then my sister is in like a headscarf.
A blue headscarf. Is that your sister then, Roisin?
That's my sister.
Dead ringer for Madonna, right. And what did she do?
So we just started at the very back of the bar while he was setting up, and we just slowly got closer to the front until we were basically right in front of him by the end of it. And then at the end, we just kind of tapped him and we're like, "Oh, would you mind taking a picture of us?" We literally got through the whole gig without him realizing.
Thank God, because if he had got, if he twigged it, he'd have fallen apart with nerves, like.
Yeah, but he said himself he was actually so happy we were there because he thinks he never played better. So it was all well in the end anyway.
Oh my God, the people in there must have thought you were totally daft, mad, particularly the get-up. Actually, it's quite stylish really, the headscarves and the bandanas and the sunglasses.
Yeah, so they're all kind of festival gear and everything, but yeah, we couldn't stop laughing. We're surprised he didn't notice.
Well, that for sure is snaky if I've ever heard it. And he's handy out, is he, on the sacks?
Oh, he's brilliant. Like, he's absolutely brilliant, but he only started when he was an adult, so he thinks he's bad, but he's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I know he feels, you know, you want to play, but you don't want anybody that knows you're watching you play, because you're always thinking that you're not as good as you possibly are, you know. Actually, it's usually the other way around with me. I think I'm better than I actually am. Anyway, what are we going to do with the €300? Are you going to split it two ways or three ways? What's your brother's name, incidentally? Are you allowed to give it?
Oh yeah, his name's Liam.
So is Liam getting 100, you're getting 100, and Roisin is getting 100, or what? Go on, you're going to be snaky now,
so,
and take the...
Well, yeah.
Oh yeah, because you'd be the snake if you kept the lot yourself, you know.
We'll take to cover the costumes and then we split the rest three ways.
Alright, well, that's the way to do it. Don't be snaky about it. Share the love. Nice one. Thanks, Ellen. Have a good one. Regards to all the family.
No,
take care.
Keep
those stories coming. Text 0868104106. We have another €300 to give away tomorrow, courtesy of ourselves and carry out off licenses to the best snaky story. You can be the snake, incidentally, and tell the story about yourself. I don't mind. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks, Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.